Ryan Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
The world can be a scary place sometimes.
You're zipping along in the left-hand lane, and all of a sudden, ha! A couch.
But don't worry. We know someone who can help you survive your week.
Noonan steps in.
He'll help you deal with problems of the modern world.
Yes, because oft times naked men will show up in your house, shower, and then make eggs.
He has all the answers.
He is one for four.
And when all else fails,
I can do 1,500 jumpy jacks.
So sit back, relax, and allow Brian Noonan to drop some knowledge.
Good job, Noons.
Right here on WGN.
Oh, ho, ho! This is great!
Boy, I tell you, it gets out of hand in a hurry.
Welcome, glad you're with me, Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue, beautiful Sunday night in July, glad you're with us. Big show planned, as always, and it's always more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. That is the number. When you call in, you'll be talking to Kassara Heining. She is executive producing the big broadcast tonight because Cody has jetted off to international ports unknown, somewhere in Europe-y, I think. But Cody's not here, so Kassara's here working with us for the first time. If you're nice to her, you get to me. Same rules apply. You can also keep in touch with us on social media. It's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. Karen Conte will be here after 8 o'clock, of course, answering your legal questions. Dr. Alan Hirsch from the Smell and Taste Institute in Chicago will join us after 7 to talk about a very interesting study that ties smell and nostalgia together. We'll find out the health effects of not having a good sense of smell and taste. We'll do all of that. And Dr. Hirsch, always a great guest, and we'll take your questions, too, during that. So a lot to get to. I have to address this because last Sunday during this very program, we were mocking Roger endlessly about his patriotic headwear. He was wearing some sort of headscarf like he was a crazed wrestler from the 80s WWE, and I didn't quite understand it. One, he doesn't ride a motorcycle, so a head wrap, you know, you see a lot of guys on bikes do that. But I do have to now give you props because I saw what you wore to the parade. You emceed the Skokie 4th of July parade,
yeah.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Skokie 4th of July parade. I saw what you wore, and I thought to myself, well, this is a fine outfit. Granted, I didn't need to see a million pictures of it on social media, but
right.
Red pants, a right. Blue blazer with white stars on it.
Dark blue blazer.
Yeah. Dark blue, yeah, navy blazer. Right. Red pants, white stars on it. You looked very nice.
Light blue shirt
yeah.
with a red and white striped tie.
You looked yeah. very nice. No crazy headgear.
Nope.
You had some patriotic socks on, which were very nice
yeah.
as well.
Captain America socks. I was thinking
yeah.
about you.
They were pretty cool. The
and
Captain
I
socks.
Wore my WGN radio hat.
Right. So I... For all the grief I gave you last Sunday, well-deserved grief, let's be honest.
Of course.
That headgear
it did
was,
look goofy.
It looked
yeah.
completely ridiculous. But for all of that, I have to give you credit because you look very patriotic and classy, not schlocky, like, oh, I'm going to try to wear as much flag-related gear as I
right.
can and just look like a mope. you looked very nice, and
well,
people
thank
can
you,
people can go to Facebook and see because Roger posted about I may be exaggerating by 10 or 12
right.
168 pictures of
yeah, thereabouts.
In there.
Thereabouts, yeah,
yeah. There was a lot.
Yeah.
With a lot of people leaning up against the glass on Michigan Avenue, looking in
oh,
like
my.
I'm in some sort of talkquarium here. It's very exciting. Michigan Avenue during the summer, people may be wandering around from the fest. They were at the American Girl store, spending all their parents' money on things that'll be end up in a big Tupperware tub, like at my house. We are now debating.
Uh oh.
Well, we've got because my daughter was the first grandchild on both sides,
oh.
first girl on my side.
Okay.
Because I have four brothers, so my mom and dad went crazy, and it was every American Girl doll.
Sure.
And
the outfits and
yes,
everything
and
else
the
that
outfits
went with
and
it.
The furniture and,
right.
and all the other stuff. So now, since my daughter is now going to be 21 next month, we haven't had the American Girl dolls out in quite some time, as you can imagine. So they are in these big Tupperware tubs, and we keep moving them and thinking to ourselves, well, what are we going to do with all the Tupperware? Are we going to... Are we going to sell them? Are we going to give them away? Is she going to want them somewhere down the road? I don't know. So,
save them.
Yeah.
Save them. Because.
You think they'll be worth something? Or
no,
maybe
no,
she'll
no,
have a
no,
daughter
no,
someday.
No, no, no. Yeah.
Maybe.
You will be grandparents, and she will want her kids to play with her dolls.
Huh? Think I can re-gift them?
To whom?
To the potential grandchildren down the road. Make it look like I'm a big deal.
Well,
oh,
yeah,
Grip,
you
will
could.
You take us to American Girl? Yeah, just come down in the basement. I've created my own American Girl. I've got them all on
Charge
shelves. Come over here, the outfits. Here's the furniture. You can shop. The furniture department is over here. Grandpa will be in the Lazy Boy. You go and take care of all your business, and we'll go from there.
You charge them when they come in. All their hard-earned, you know, money they make from chores.
And again, this is all imaginary future Brian.
Right.
Who I'm going to imagine will be a great grandfather.
You will be awesome.
Well, because I watched my dad, who was a good dad, but not the most emotionally available, as a lot of guys in his time were. That's fine.
Yeah.
He was a good dad. He became a really excellent grandfather.
There you go.
So I'm hoping that the trend will continue, because I'm sure there will be people who might make the same statement about me someday. Well... He tried his best, but he was not emotionally available. But he turned out, you know, on his deathbed, he really gave a beautiful soliloquy right before the Grim Reaper snuffed out his candle. He was mad.
Wow.
All the feelings just came right out. So that was...
Well, when we cleaned out our storage lockers a couple of years ago, we had a lot of the old stuff from Sarah and David.
Okay.
But the stuff from Sarah, the dolls and the books and the comics and everything and the old doll chairs and stuff... The first thing I did, after, of course, I took pictures and posted everything, was to send it to her and say, do you want this?
Yeah.
And she said, yes, yes, no, yes. And she got like 90% of the stuff.
Okay.
So now she has to deal with the storage.
Yeah.
All the dolls are in the girls' rooms. There's no room for the girls now to sleep or have clothes or anything. It's just all dolls and doll-related stuff. But they love it. So,
Well, see, the problem is, with Molly still in school, we're her primary residence.
Right.
So it's got to stay with us until she gets a job.
It's not bothering anyone.
No,
is it? What? I mean, have you run out of room?
Is it bothering anyone? No, it's just at some point as you start to whittle down possessions and try to, you know, purge more and more, it's like, all right, and then there's stuff that my mom is... That they don't make it. American Girl doesn't make this stuff anymore. Angelina Ballerina. If you have girls, you probably know about this. She was a mouse, was a ballerina.
Right.
And they had all the books. And they had, so, you know, that was she's got all the Angelina Ballerina stuff that they don't make. So my mom is like, don't give that away because that's going to be worth something. I'll buy it back. I'm like, no.
She'll buy it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that would just...
Well, it's not going to be worth much anymore because they made 10 gazillion of these things. And everybody in the world's got them. And I found that out when I tried to sell stuff online that I thought, like, wow, you know, this stuff's rare. No.
Well, that was like when you tried to bring in stuff for our sports memorabilia.
Oh, that's
present.
Right. That was just a couple of them.
Yeah,
I'm talking about stuff I wouldn't even bother bringing in because I already knew they had no value.
Well, and sadly, you learned the stuff you did bring in had
no value either.
Right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I dealt with probably the most condescending human being on the face of the earth. And you can imagine how that went. Well, Brian Noonan, 720 WGN, a typical Sunday night get-together. We've been here a lot this week together. Roger was here a couple extra times this week. I was here a few extra times yesterday morning for Lou Manfredini, which was, oh, man, that was fun being in for Lou, even though everybody knows I can't really fix anything. But thankfully, they had some experts with me who were able to give the good advice and do the heavy lifting. Because then after... I got off the air at 10, and I went up to the Irish American Heritage Center because it's Irish Fest this weekend. It's still going on tonight till about 9:30 or 10 o'clock. But we had been there Friday night to see Michael McDermott and some other wonderful bands. And then we went yesterday morning because we were volunteering. So we had signed up to volunteer to sell drink tickets outside. So if you know when you go to a festival, they've got these booths, usually wooden. a nice plywood booth that you sit inside, and then you sell the tickets. So it's very simple. It's a monkey can do it if a monkey can count to 10, because that's really your sheets of 10 tickets. Dollar a ticket, it's $10. Bang, 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 everything's fine. You know, a beer, an import costs $6, domestic costs $5, water is $2. Simple, right? So my wife and I get there, and they give us our box. And it's like, did you ever see Cool Hand Luke, Roger?
Oh, yeah.
You know
when
he has to go to the box?
Yeah.
Man's got to go to the box. This is exactly what this box is like. It's literally a box with two squares covered in plexiglass. Thankfully, they have a small air conditioner in there so you don't suffocate, because you're sitting in a box in the hot sun.
Yeah, that would not be pleasant.
Not pleasant.
No.
And you're in there for 2.5 to 3 hours, and you're not allowed to...
Are you allowed to breathe?
You can breathe, but they also tell you you might want to go make sure you go to the bathroom beforehand, because two people have to stay in the box the whole time.
What?
Well, with the money, they don't want to leave one person in the box, because one person might be shifty. And since I was in the box with my wife,
they knew you had issues.
No, they knew there might be some shiftiness involved if I went to the bathroom. I'm not saying she has sticky fingers, but she has larceny in her heart. That's all I'm saying. So we're in the box. And
that sounds so bad.
Well, it's like halfway through, I stood up and I just would dangle my hands out the little window where the people passed the money through. So all you'd see if you were walking up to the box are my hands just limply, so people knew we were in the box, because they had little tiny chairs in there. So when you sat down, you were almost eye level with the counter. Unless you were standing up, people couldn't see you. Anyway, people are hilarious at these festivals, because a lot of people don't acknowledge you. You say hello or good afternoon, and they just stare at you.
Just cry. Just give me my tickets.
Right. And then, or they won't even, I had one guy walk up. I said, hey, sir, how you doing? What can I get you? He didn't even say he wanted four tickets. He just held up four fingers. And I know he wasn't mute, because I saw him as he walked away talk to other people. Yeah. But he completely dissed me. I'm like, just because I'm in a box doesn't mean I'm, you know, animatronic. This is not an ATM with hands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a human being. I felt like the Elephant Man. I'm a human being. I'm just banging on the window of the box like I'm, you know, Gary Busey and Carney as he's sitting in the dunk tank.
Yeah.
All right. So that. And we're making fun. I'm making fun of.
You should have put up like two fingers in response to his four. Got a deal here, you know.
I almost gave one guy one finger because I was, my wife has been trapped with me for 25 years, but never in a box.
Okay.
So it was like being tandem buried alive for her, because there was no escaping. She couldn't walk into the kitchen. She couldn't say, I have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
She could say, oh, look, a bird, and then run out. She was stuck in a box with me for 3 hours.
Oh, God.
And
I
have to amuse myself in the box. So I'm amusing myself by...
Amuse the man in the box.
By making comments about everybody that walks by. Oh, look at Big Shorts. Oh, look at this.
How many shows did you do in those 3 hours?
Well, I did one long set. It was phenomenal. I was killing. I was killing in the box. They've actually re-signed me to come back next year.
Wow, that's awesome.
I'm playing the box. But now I'm in there, and... A young man or a woman. I'm going to say they were late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
That's your time frame.
Okay.
And they came up, and the woman said, oh, you know, I'd like to get some tickets. Okay, what can I get you? And they're doing the math. Like, the easiest thing is to just say, I want $20 worth of tickets. Or, you know, but I know a lot of people are thinking, well, if I don't use them, I can't get rid of them. I can't use them again next year. I can't get. So you don't want to waste money. So a lot of people are doing math in line, trying to figure out how many beers they're going to have and then figure out how many tickets they want. And that's okay. So the woman says, you know, she's discussing it with this guy and he's giving his input, but he's not reaching into his wallet. She's doing all the finance. So he's just suggesting. And they land on a figure, $36. They're going to $36. That's six beer, three beers each. All right. That's nice. She says, $36, or 36 tickets. Okay. I say, okay, that'll be $36. And she hands me the money. And I see she's handing me two 20s, a 5, and a 1, which, since I am teaching kindergarten in summer school, I know equals $46.
Yeah.
I'm not the brightest bulb, but I'm also not the dimmest. So she hands me the $46. I say $36. And the guy pipes up, you know, Tightwad Johnson, who hasn't gone into his pocket for anything. The guy with Tyrannosaurus arms when it comes to reaching for his wallet. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say anything. All of a sudden, he pipes up. Actually, she gave you $46, so we get $10 in change. Now, imagine.
Duh.
Imagine how that sat with me. A man who's been in a box for a couple hours.
Yeah.
I take a beat.
I hope.
And I slowly look at him and I go, wow. Thank you, sir. I did. God. And my wife takes a deep breath.
Oh, no.
And his girlfriend is like, I'm sorry, he's such a jerk. And so I count out the 36 tickets. I hand her and I said, and here's your $10 change. And she's like, I'm sorry, I can't take him anywhere. I go, why don't you take him somewhere and get him a beer?
You did?
I did. Honest,
oh
I, what are they going to do? I'm volunteering. They're going to come drag me out of the box for bad attitude? No, they don't care. They want the $36. They don't care if I'm, you know, if I'm offended by this
right.
guy. And I'm thinking, where do you get off being that condescending to someone?
Yeah.
Maybe he's gotten changed before. But if you look at me, you got to figure I can do simple math, right? I mean, I'm not wearing a mortarboard, and I don't have a pocket protector or a clipboard with me. I don't have a big calculator. But you've got to figure, I'm a grown man. I was able to get dressed.
Yeah.
I'm in this box, granted, but that doesn't mean I'm some sort of exhibition.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. All right, real quick. So she's handling all the money, right? He's just like a nothing. He's a throwaway.
Yeah.
But he needs to feel important.
I'm
saying that, all right? So
sure.
So she's got all the money. So now what he's probably thinking is, because you and your wife are in the booth, he's probably thinking, all right, your wife's the smart one.
Why? Because she conned me into sitting in a box with her?
Probably. And that
so
you're the one handling the money, so now you need some extra help.
Well, sure,
and since he's got nothing better to do with his time, He's got to tell you.
Or maybe he's so dumb that he was so proud of himself that he figured that math problem out on his own.
How long did it take him?
Well, long enough for, you know, I beat him to the punch.
Beat him to the...
Somebody saying, texting in, welcome to being a cashier. Or somebody saying, well, maybe he thought she was stupid and he was giving you too much money. And somebody is saying I should have brought a water bottle so that I had
spray
something.
Him?
That I would have, because I told you we couldn't get out to go to the
bathroom.
Oh,
that's right.
I did have a couple water bottles in there, but I didn't drink them just for that reason.
Right, because then you'd have to.
Right. Yeah. So I can't. Yeah. Oh, no. I treated being in the box like I do a transatlantic flight. I'm not getting out of my seat.
Yeah,
so I got in, I buckled up, I took care of business beforehand, everything was fine. I was in for the long haul.
Yeah.
Wow. I do have greater respect. I've worked in retail.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people work in retail, mm-hmm. and it's amazing to me how rude people can be.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if they're trying to be rude or if they're just oblivious to the fact that, you know, you're talking to another human being. They're so used to looking at a device that when they're confronted with a human being, that's why I like the stores that say, turn your phone off before you come to the counter, because we're not going to deal with you. If you're on your phone, take a hike.
Yeah.
We'll give up the $4 you're going to spend, you know, or whatever. We'll give up on that. You just walk away.
Yeah. Yeah, so retail's tough.
Retail's very tough, and people are, you know, people are all wrapped up. But I have an ethical quandary.
Uh-oh.
That we're going to get to on the other side of the news. Plus, I have a big update on a story we did earlier in the week when I was in for Rowan Anna. So we've got all that coming up. And I don't know what we'll have time for. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Dr. Alan Hirsch will join us after 7 o'clock, the founder of the Smell and Taste Institute in Chicago. Very interesting study coming up. He'll answer your questions regarding your senses of smell and taste and all of that. All right, ethical quandary time. Now, I want your opinions at 312-981-7200, but the decision had to be made in the heat of the moment. But I'm wondering, if you ever thought to yourself, what would Brian do? Which you probably have and then have done the exact opposite, which I would say probably good judgment on your part. This is what happened. So Friday night I told you we were at the Irish American Heritage Center for Irish Fest.
Right.
And if you missed it this year, it's always fun whether you're Irish or not, because there's so much wonderful music. And yesterday, the wolfhounds were there. These, have you ever seen an Irish wolfhound? It's as big as you, Roger.
Yeah.
An Irish wolfhound.
Yeah.
These are monstrously huge dogs, very gentle. Anyway, so a lot going on. So we go to see our good friend Michael McDermott play Friday night. And we see some other bands there before he goes on. We're having a wonderful time. And one of the Insatiable Insomniacs, CB, was with us. My wife and I.
So wow.
The three
I haven't heard about
there.
Them in a while.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They, you know, they got real jobs and we're not on the overnight anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
So, so we're leaving. And now it's, I don't know, let's say midnight.
Okay.
Sure. Because I know I have to be here at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning.
That's
so,
right. Yeah, lose show. Yeah.
Listen, that's all right. So I leave at 6, or midnight. Mm-hmm. And we're walking. And now we're about a block away from the Heritage Center going toward our car. And I look down on the ground, and I see like an old school change purse, a Hawaiian print kind of change purse.
Ooh,
you know?
All right.
But like my wife and Chris had walked over it, and I thought, well, maybe that's not so. But I stopped because I'm curious. You know, I've got that kind of mind. I
was it
know.
Shiny?
No, it was like materially. It was okay. Materially. It was made of fabric. It was,
was it a zipper one or one that you pinch and it pops open?
It had some Velcro.
Oh, Velcro.
Like a fold over, like Velcro. It may have been homemade. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I pick it up, and I'm like, oh, this is a change purse. And I immediately think to myself, well, let's see if there's ID in there and I could run it back to the center or I could call the person. I open it up. There's no identifying marks at all. Not a label on the bag, not or on the little deal. There's no ID. There's no credit cards. All there is $85 in cash.
Oops.
Yep, $85 in cash. And I say, oh, my gosh, look at this. And Now it starts. Well, what do I do with it?
Right.
Well, anytime I'd say, hey, man, anybody lose $85? How many hands do you think are going up?
Everyone?
Right. People who weren't
some
even
twice.
At the fest are going to, yeah, every hand is going. Everybody. And, you know, it could have been, it didn't have to be somebody from the fest. It probably was because we were, like I said, about a block away.
Yeah. Could have been anyone walking around
been
the neighborhood.
Yeah. Could have been anything. So my wife is like, no, is there ID? No. Then keep it.
And no.
My buddy says, you got to keep it. And so I kept it. But that's it. So even yesterday, I was like, you know, I'm debating.
Right.
You know. But again, when it's just cash, I'm not, and there's nobody around. If I had seen somebody drop it, of course I'm giving it back. If there's any sort of ID, if there's anything that identifies this little thing, I'm going to do my best to try to figure it out. But part of me was like, well, it's found cash. And I know that would suck if you lost that kind of money.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
I would have.
Yeah, you're going to. Now, everybody's going to make me feel bad about myself.
Well, no,
now,
I don't.
Right?
No, because you
even
did what
Sarah's
you felt.
Even is looking like, oh, dude.
You did what you felt in your mind was appropriate. Everybody else handles situations differently.
Now, I've had this situation previously.
Uh-huh.
Once, I was at a Walmart. And I walked up to a line, a self-checkout line, and there was nobody there. There was nobody in front of me. Nobody had just walked away. It was a completely empty line.
Okay.
And there was a $100 bill somebody had left it or it popped out of the machine, whatever. There was a $100 bill. But again, there was nobody. Nobody. And it wasn't in the machine. It was like on the floor.
Wow.
And again, what am I going to say? Hey, anybody lose $100?
No. I would have turned that into.
Would you?
I would have kept it.
You would have kept it. See, all right, we're split.
Yeah.
I kept that one too because again, there was nobody around.
I need to follow you around. You're finding all this money.
Well,
I never find anything.
That hundred was back when we lived in California, so that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, but still the purse thing, was it,
well,
out,
it wasn't a purse.
Out in front of a house?
No, it was just on a a street adjacent to a parking lot.
Oh, wow.
Right. So it was just, it wasn't on somebody's porch. It wasn't
just
a purse. It was like
a little change purse.
Card holder. Yeah, like a change purse.
I know. My
wife's
got one of those.
Yeah.
But she keeps all her IDs and stuff in it along with
right.
her money.
Right. And then I have absolutely no hesitation. There's not a question in my mind. Ooh, I'm getting a hold of this person and turning that stuff in.
Right.
It would almost be like if I had just found a wad of money sitting on the
I would have left it there personally. I would have.
You would not have left a wad of money sitting on the street.
Yes, I would have. It's not mine. It's I would have had a horrible dilemma with my conscience.
Wow.
Seriously, I would have.
You've never... I have student loan debt, so if I find a wad of money, it's right. going straight to my school.
Yeah. I just spent a bunch on Guinness. I found my paper.
There you go.
No. Come on, Roger.
Yes.
You know I love you.
I know.
I find it hard to believe that you would step over money and just leave it laying on the street.
It's not mine. It's not
mine.
Well,
then someone else is going
to
take it.
I would have left the quandary up to them then. It's not. It's not of my doing.
You are a man among men.
Yeah, you're a good one.
We're gonna start. We gotta trap him. I'm gonna start laying traps for Roger.
What?
I'm gonna leave.
I support trap.
I'm just gonna leave wads of money around where I know you're gonna be walking. And see, you go, oh, and I'm not talking. You know,
I'll pick it up and I'll see you on Sunday and say, hey, Brian, you dropped this.
No,
I would have given it back to you.
Never know it was me. You'll never know it was me. But now anytime you, for the rest of your life,
right.
if you ever see any money, you're yeah. going to think it was me, whether it's a quarter
right.
or a 20 or a dollar.
And
you're
going to
go,
ooh, right.
oh, this could be Brian.
And I'll stand there, point at it, and laugh and walk away.
I could have left you Confederate Sanskrit, and you, I don't even know.
There's what the not, heck?
I made up money. You'd still pick it up.
Now, I would have brought it in on a Sunday show to see if your guy could have evaluated it and see if it was worth anything.
Oh, somebody talking about the 15-year-old $100 bill at the store camera. I don't even know if they had cameras back there in the day. They probably did, but again, nobody had been around.
Right.
So, and to a camera to pick up a piece of paper falling, you know, a bill falling out of somebody's pocket onto the floor.
Those cameras have a wide angle.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have been the issue, but. What quandary? Loose money laying on the ground? Mine. That's from another texter. A lot of the texters agreeing with me. Keep it. If God gives, then you should keep what you find if no one's around. See?
Hey, if God had left his change purse on the... Well, you'd be in trouble.
Here's the thing.
That.
God's smart enough to put a label on his change
exactly,
purse.
An ID.
Right. He's keeping it... You know, God is not dropping his money. He's all-knowing. He would have known that he dropped his
exactly.
money and stopped and picked it up. Your argument is flawed because God is going... He's omnipotent. He goes, oh, something fell out of my pants, and it's my money. I'm going to pick it up. You know, he's not getting home going, man, I'm so wasted. Where's my cash? That's not happening when God goes to a festival. God's leaving, everything's fine. Plus, is he really going to bring money, or is he just going to go to the water fountain? Suddenly, boom, he doesn't need to buy tickets for drinks.
True.
The drinks are just flowing wherever he is. Am I right? I believe that I am. Yes, that's... what if someone had come by after Roger picked up the $85, brought drugs, and OD'd? Then how would you feel, Roger? Yeah.
I wouldn't know about it.
Well...
I wouldn't have known about
it. Sure, because you'd be reporting on it the next day.
Well, maybe.
A man OD'd with found money.
No, yeah. That wouldn't be...
That's it.
No.
If I can quote Tom Cruise in The Color of Money, money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's... And this was, it was very nice, you know? Uh-oh. Well,
there goes.
Betty's mad at me. Betty is mad at me. Hi, Betty. That's all right.
I can't believe that you don't know if you find cash and no ID, you take it to the police station. They take all your information. If nobody picks it up or calls in a certain amount of time, they call you and you get it. You don't know what people were depending on for that. Could have been some person that was their transportation home.
Well, they already got home.
Some old lady's grocery money, like me.
How much
it's
did you lose?
Money.
How much did you lose, Betty?
No, no,
okay,
I
wasn't
haven't.
You.
$80, Betty. Tell him it's $80.
$100. That's a lot of money.
Oh no, the hundred was 15 years ago. Those people have.
How much was in the? Oh, 90. Was it 90?
I'm not telling you now, Betty. I'm not, whatever. I'm not some rube.
You just said 90. That's close enough to 100. You take it to the police station in that area, and somebody probably already called. Did anybody turn this in? No, nobody turned it in because Brian Noonan picked it up, stuffed it in his pocket, and went home.
If somebody can identify, I'll tell you what.
Yes,
if somebody
can, that's why they do that.
Right. Well, I'm here now. I'm admitting to it, Betty. If somebody can identify.
Might not even be listening to you on the radio.
That's, well, I'm putting it out to millions of people. I'm putting it out to the world. We're streaming worldwide. If somebody knows somebody, I don't know where. It's a neighborhood I'm not familiar with. I don't know the district. I'm not going to drive around all night
looking
for the police station.
Hard to find out, yeah.
Yes. Nobody's going to, you know, listen.
That's terrible. I wouldn't be able to sleep. I would not be able to sleep.
See, that's
I slept like
about.
A rich baby.
Same. That's me. I don't even know you can take money to the police station, though.
Try to give it back.
All right, well, I'm putting the word out. If you could describe what it was in.
You ever heard of karma?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then maybe, listen, maybe I've been so nice, this was karma rewarding me. You ever think about that, Betty?
Yeah, good karma turns. Does exist.
Yeah, maybe I got, maybe I was the recipient of good karma.
You're going to put on the radio what it looked like, and you're going to get 50 people calling saying that.
No, I'm not. No, they have to tell me what it looks like.
Oh, okay, yeah, like that'll happen.
if they
just had to call. I never call.
That's all right.
I had to call.
Well, you were the voice of, you were the moral center of the program to this point, Betty. Because I believe you, I don't believe Roger. But thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. All right, let's do this. Let's do this. Then there'll be an update. Listen, people are calling. If you want to call, that's fine. Listen. First of all,
yeah,
I had had two beers, so
right.
I was fine to drive. But I'm not going to the. I'm not going to it. I'm in a strange neighborhood. I don't know where. You know what?
Where's the next? The nearest.
Where am I gonna, I'm going to drive around for an hour looking for the police.
Use your GPS. Use your map thing on
that's
your phone.
That's a lot of hassle.
What?
I'm gonna go with the. Listen. Sometimes I deserve good karma. Sometimes I deserve a break. You know, that paid for the kid to take care of my dogs yesterday. And if you think you can describe, and it can't be my wife, she can't call and go, I know what it was. Give me the $85. If it was somebody else, no, this is Laura's lying.
Uh-oh.
Laura's lying. All right.
Hey.
We'll take the call. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Listen, I work at the Irish Center, and people call all the time about lost and found stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman did come in the office, she had, I'm not going to describe what she said, because maybe she'll call and, you know, tell you what it looked like. But she said she lost her, she didn't describe it as a change purse. She described it some other way.
Okay.
But she said there was cash in it,
mm-hmm.
and so in the office, there is a lost and found. We took her name and phone number, and her name and phone number is in the office at the Irish Center.
Okay.
If somebody wants to give her a call.
All right. Well, let's listen. Have Kathy send me an email with the description of the thing. And if that is it, then I will definitely return the money.
Okay, I couldn't believe I was just listening to you guys talk about it because I'm like, wait a minute.
When did she come in?
Oh, gosh, I've been there for the last 3 days. I don't remember which day it was.
All right. If she came in today, that doesn't count. She came in Friday, doesn't count. Well, today maybe. But no, she would have known. She would have known she lost her money because this was Friday night.
Well, it wasn't obviously Friday night.
Right, I am. You're right.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's, and she described what it was in?
Well, she sure could.
Well, yeah, let's see. If she could describe it, then we'll definitely get it back to her.
All right. I will tell Kathy we'll
listen, I'm not opposed to, I'm not an evil human being. Put it out there. If I find a little cash, I'm going to hang on to it if nobody's around. All right. But Laura,
I'm glad I heard you.
I am, well, I'm not. But no. Be honest. It's fine. But if we'll figure it out. So have Kathy contact me, and if it is indeed this woman's, then she will get her money back.
Sounds good.
All right, Laura. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Look at that. I should have kept my mouth shut.
See, I knew it would come back.
I didn't do anything wrong with it.
No,
I admitted to it, and now we may have the owner, and she'll get it back.
No.
Everything's
exactly.
Gonna be fine.
I don't have the little
I don't have the little change percy thing anymore.
I set
that on. If I burned that, it's gone.
That's evidence.
What am I going to do? I'm not going to keep some little change purse.
Why not?
What am I going to do?
Full of storage bins.
No, you obviously can't keep track of it. I'm breaking, Cassandra. Don't worry.
Welcome to Cody's world.
Yeah, welcome to this show.
No, you're fine. I was going to say I would have sold the little purse thing and made money off of that.
Now there you go. No, the purse thing obviously can't stay in your pocket.
Right.
So I don't trust that. I'm not going to lose my money by keeping it in that little purse. But again, we'll see. I'm a friend of that lady. Her car broke down, and she says I can pick up the money. Yeah, right. Everybody's okay. Sure. Everybody's got a story. This was a very particular kind of thing. You have to describe it, and I may not have been 100% accurate with the count either.
Hey,
I'm a storyteller.
Yes, you are.
Maybe I went up. Maybe I went down. Maybe it was $1.50, and I said $85 to make the story a little spicier. add a little more moral dilemma.
Oh.
All right. So
a mystery.
Yeah, a little mystery. That's all I'm saying. So if, but if we have found the owner,
is
bingo.
This like a radio version of The Price is Right?
No.
Now they got to go higher, lower.
No, they've got to tell me what was in it and what it looked like.
There you go. All right.
I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because how many people right now are listening going, we got to figure this out. He gave us some clues. Everybody wants found cash. So we will see. All right, a lot of people saying they would have just kept the money and kept their mouths shut. But, see, now, if, as our caller before, Betty said, have you ever thought about karma? Well, I've put it out there. And if we do, in fact, find the owner, then karma should be repaid. I still think me finding money was karma.
Yeah,
but
that was good karma.
I think that was good karma.
Now that you're giving it back, it's going to be more good karma. So
So you're saying, Cassara, that I'm building up a good karma account.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I'm looking for a windfall down the road. Karmic windfall.
Yeah, pretty much. It's going to come your way. You know?
Well, it better hurry up. Here's an update. Earlier in this week, you may have seen this story. I talked about it, I believe, on Tuesday. There was a guy in Pittsburgh who was trying to do some home improvement work, and he decided a good idea was going to be to tie a string around an alarm clock and lower it into his wall so that when the alarm beeped, he'd know where to drill a hole because he was installing a TV on his wall. Well, as luck would have it, and as much as it would happen to me, the string broke, the clock fell in the wall. For 13 years, this clock sat in his wall with the alarm going off every night at 7:50. Every night the alarm would go off for 13 years. First of all, you think to yourself, those are great batteries. I got to figure out where I'm going to get those kind of batteries. Secondly, you wonder, at what point do you just punch a hole in the wall and pull the clock out? Because it's, well, finally, because the story got national attention, the couple near Pittsburgh finally retrieved the alarm clock that had been stuck inside their wall. Sylvia and Jerry Lynn are the couple. They heard the alarm buzz at the same time every night for 13 years, finally had the clock removed after their story gained national attention. National attention. Low-cost heating and air conditioning was a company that came in and got the clock. They cut a hole in the garage wall and fished it out that way rather than cutting a hole. See, that's smart. That's why they're professionals. I would have just started kicking the drywall in my house till I found this clock. But they got it out that way. And according to the people with the HVAC company, this is the first time, no pun intended, that I had to remove a clock from inside ductwork. So I told you how it happened. He dropped it. And I've mentioned that I'm not handy. Are you handy, Roger?
Extremely so.
Are you really?
I have several tool sets around apartment.
And that makes you handy?
No.
I have a lot of tools.
I've done major repairs on a lot of stuff. I've replaced sinks. I've built things. I've been the maintenance guy in our building when we first moved in.
Okay.
Really? Yeah.
Would you have advised this guy to lower an alarm clock to so he thought the sound waves emanating from the clock, he'd be able to pinpoint those with his obviously very trained ear and then drill a hole in the precise location to put
his TV.
No, I
wouldn't have done it that way.
Of course. Who would have done it that way?
No.
This guy. And then 13 years, he leaves it in there. 13 years.
No.
The couple expected the clock to die after a few months. It was a Rayovac battery. If they are not getting a endorsement deal from Rayovac right now, except... On the flip side, if I'm Rayovac, do I want to be associated with a guy who dropped a clock into his wall and left it there for 13 years?
Well, yeah.
Is that the poster boy I want for my battery?
Sure.
I guess it's the kind of testimonial I want for my battery saying, hey, look, you can put this battery in your travel alarm clock, and it will last for 13 years.
There you go. Just ask, and whatever the guy's name was.
Well, I put it in my wall, and it lay every night for 13 years. It just went off. It was beautiful. I never would buy another kind of battery other than Rayovac. I don't care if those other ones have copper tops or anything. I like a nice Rayovac.
Good for Rayovac. That's a battery I don't hear about much anymore, Rayovac.
Yeah, you don't.
Well, maybe are they still in business? They must still be in business.
I don't know.
They got used to the nightly alarm eventually and even considered it, quote-unquote, kind of cute. So he decided to leave it as a conversation starter. That conversation ends with, dude, you're an idiot. Doesn't every conversation that you have about, yes, it does. How'd the clock get in the wall? Blah, 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 blah. Dude, you're an idiot. Every time. That's how that conversation always ends. He said, you're sitting around playing bridge and it goes off. Is that an alarm clock? Why is the alarm clock going off? It's in the wall. Followed by, dude, you're an idiot. That's how it ends. After 13 years, the clock looked almost exactly how he remembered it when he dropped it in the wall on that fateful day. It's a travel alarm. I was right on that. And it's digital. I was right on that. And it's just the style on that I was wrong. They plan to keep the nightly ritual by now putting that clock on their mantle and having it go off every night.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Is it? You, boy, we're learning a lot about you today, Roger. You are, you must still be in that patriotic mood from the parade. You are just all about love tonight.
I am.
You're walking over money that's on the street.
Yeah.
You're saying how cute this is that a guy who made one of the most idiotic home repair moves in the history of home repair now is going to celebrate that every night with the alarm still going off on his mantle.
Now he's got a story he can tell all of his neighbors for forever.
Well, and they all will still end the same way. Yeah. Dude, you're an idiot. I had to pay a company to come in and cut my wall because I left this clock in there for 13 years.
Yeah, but look at all the newspaper articles. Now he can frame and put all around there.
Well, I'll send him a tape of this, see if he's proud of that. He can run it on a continuous loop. Just right next to every time the clock goes off, he'll just go, dude, you're an idiot. That's the two should go back to back. All right, let's do this. I'm going to take a break. See if you can figure out how long I'm going to be gone.
All of us. Online. On demand. WGNradio.com. On demand.
If you guessed 8 seconds, you're right. I'm back. On the other side of the news, Dr. Alan Hirsch will join us. He's from the Smell and Taste Institute here in Chicago. Very interesting study about smell and nostalgia. He'll answer your questions. We'll talk about smelling and tasting. We'll do that on the other side of the news. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conti will be here in an hour. She'll be answering your legal questions, so start formulating them now. Right now, we are going to turn to your nose and your mouth, your sense of smell and your sense of taste. Dr. Alan Hirsch is with the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation here in Chicago. We haven't talked to the doctor in a while, but he is always a fascinating guest. Doctor, thanks for taking some time tonight. Welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with, you know, what can be wrong if someone doesn't have a sense of smell or a sense of taste? What can lead to that? Because are there a lot of people who are affected by this? I am one of those people. I have no sense of smell. What could have led me to be in this predicament or other people?
Oh, you know, there are literally 3 to 6 million Americans who have trouble smelling or tasting. And there are all sorts of different things that cause it. The number one cause of loss of smell that we see here at the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation in Chicago is a result of head trauma from motor vehicle accidents. Although you can see smell loss from all sorts of other conditions. For instance, a common thing that people do is they smoke cigarettes. About 23% of the United States are smoking cigarettes, and cigarette smoke reduces ability to smell. Similarly, many different drugs that people take impair their sense of smell, and also a whole host of other conditions, anywhere from hypothyroidism to diabetes, even AIDS is associated with reduced ability to smell. And when we talk about smell, we should be talking about smell and taste.
Okay.
Because about 90% of what we call taste is really smell. If you hold your nose and eat chocolate, it tastes just like chalk. It has no taste at all. If you hold your nose and eat an apple, an onion, or a carrot, and a potato, they taste identical. When we say taste, it's what it really represents is retronasal smell. So smell that comes from outside our nose up to the top of our nose, we call that smell. On the other hand, smells that come in from our mouth and go through the back of our throat to the top of our nose, we call those smells taste. And it's a form of physiologic synesthesia, or misperception of one sense as another. So, for instance, if you close your eyes and you lightly push in your eyeballs, you see light. Well, there's no light there.
Right.
You're misperceiving the pressure as light. Well, the same thing happens with smell and taste all the time. So when people say they lost a sense of taste, for instance, when they get a cold, they haven't. What they've lost is they've lost their sense of smell.
Now, you described a lot of things that maybe a trauma or some disease that came out can affect that. Can people, are people born without these senses, or is it always something else that then deprives them of these?
Well, you are 100% right. People can be born without the sense of smell and sense of taste. But even more significant than this is that there's a tremendous diversity in ability to smell. So, for instance, Korean Americans have a better ability to smell than whites, who are better than black, who are better than Japanese. They have the worst ability to smell. If you work indoors, your sense of smell is better than if you work out of doors, which is better than you're unemployed, which may have to do with the number of colds that one gets. So, also, as you get older, your sense of smell drops down. So about half of those over the age of 65 and three-quarters of those over the age of 80 have a reduced ability to smell. And so there's a natural progression in reduction of ability to smell. But even beyond that, there's a wide variation in what's considered normal. So, you know, if you go to your doctor's office and he or she may check your vision and they say 20/20 is normal and 20/400 is legally blind.
Right.
Well, imagine if that entire range was all normal. And that's how wide variation the ability to smell is. So your ability to smell might be 1,000 times better than mine, yet we're both considered normal because there's such a wide variation in abilities.
So are there treatments for that? I mean, you've been doing this for 30 years, researching this at the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation. Can people regain their sense, whether they've not had it since birth or whether they lost it due to illness or a trauma? Can they come back?
Well, very oftentimes, they actually can come back, and there's different ways that you can use. You know, when I went to medical school, they said, don't even bother testing sense of smell because there's nothing you can do for it. We now know that there are things you can do to help people who've lost their sense of smell. One of the simple things that we know is something called sniff therapy, and that is if you've lost your sense of smell, let's say from a cold or head trauma, try and sniff some sort of odor that you like, a perfume or a cologne. Sniff it many times a day. And what maybe 6 or 10 times a day, 3 times in each nostril. And after a few months, in a substantial number of people, their sense of smell will come back.
Huh.
And the idea is that you can actually induce receptor sites to develop on the nerve cells. Imagine this, if you can, for a second. Imagine if somebody is blind, and if you show them, let's say they're colorblind, they can't tell the difference between red and green. I could be showing them red and green colors all day long, and they all year long, and they would never be able to tell the difference. Whereas with smell, using odors, you can actually cause those nerve cells to develop receptor sites and smell smells that you hadn't been in the past. Even beyond that, if your sense of smell or taste is down, there are different medications that one can use, often different vitamins or food supplements that also help smell and taste loss. But I encourage anybody who has lost their sense of smell, please talk with your physician, because loss of smell could indicate early onset of different disorders. We see it, as, for instance, as a predictor of development of eventual Parkinson's disease. We even see it as early onset of Alzheimer's disease. So there are many different diseases that smell loss can precede and actually predict, which you can then use different treatments of to help prevent.
And again, I'm concerned about this now after what you've said, but for someone like me who's never had a sense of smell, is that, am I in the same boat with those indicators or not?
No. We see people who've never had a sense of smell under two different conditions. One, we see it as part of congenital smell loss, where they've had it as either a genetic condition or something that occurred very early on in development. The second condition we see, and those individuals tend not to be responsive to interventions.
Mm-hmm.
The second group we see are those who actually were probably normal at birth and then soon afterwards had head trauma, and they didn't recognize that they had head trauma. And those groups tend to be more responsive to medications. So depending upon which group you fall into, it may be responsive or unresponsive. But, you know, there are many things that you can do. You know, sense of smell is so important. When people lose their sense of smell, they become depressed. They become anxious. There's an increased incidence of marital discord. There's more social anxiety after one loses one's sense of smell, possibly because smell is something that we use to help us decide our external environment and how we interact with others. And possibly there's maybe some sort of free-floating Valium in the air, for instance, that we're all detecting. And when you can't detect it, you become anxious. And so when you lose your sense of smell, anxiety goes up and depression goes up. So what I encourage everyone to do, all your listeners, please always wear your seatbelt. because it's much easier to prevent smell loss from head trauma than it is to actually treat it once it's occurred.
Dr. Alan Hirsch is my guest. Smellandtaste.org is the website. We're going to take a quick break, doctor, and then we'll come back. I want to talk about this study linking smell to nostalgia and different how different geographical groups respond to it in different ages. It's a very fascinating study. We're talking taste and smell with Dr. Alan Hirsch from the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation here in Chicago. Smellandtaste.org is the website. Doctor, thanks again for staying on with us. I want to talk about this study that you you conducted that links nostalgia and our memories with us, with your sense of smell. But let me ask, there was a figure that I read in the, in these reports, in these studies. How many different odors can a healthy person identify, according to your research?
Well, you know, people can identify anywhere from 10,000 to 30,000 different aromas. However, one of the more recent studies suggested that that might be wildly underestimated and might be hundreds of thousands of different odors. And one of the challenges we have is people aren't used to naming smells. They'll name a smell based on some visual thing or, it's, right. or some food they have. It smells like coffee or it smells like bread or whatever. But just like the Eskimos have, what, 12 different words for snow, we could, if we paid attention to our smell sensations, we'd be able to have all sorts of different names and recognize all sorts of different odors that we otherwise had not. And, you know, if you think about it, there's an entire universe, invisible universe at the tip of our nose that's impacted upon us all the time, whether we recognize it or not. And so as a result, smells can actually impact upon our emotions. You know, the part of the brain that we think smells or the olfactory lobe is actually part of the limbic system or the emotional brain. So the quickest way to change somebody's mood state or behavior, quicker than with any other sensory modality, is with smell. You smell a smell and you immediately decide, I like it or I don't like it. And then you figure out what it is, a rose, a lilac, right. Whatever. Totally different than the visual sphere. For instance, you see a picture of a cow or a tree or a horse, you decide if you like it or not. You identify and then you decide if you like it or not. With smell, it's opposite. It's a pure affective or emotional sense.
And we hear all the time that people say, oh, that smell reminds me of something. And that's kind of what this study was about. People associate smells with memories, correct? And they're yearning for the past.
Exactly right. As a matter of fact, when we think about smells, we associate a smell, we imprint smell with the memory of the past. So we looked at this phenomenon called olfactory evoked nostalgia, where you smell a smell and you have a vivid memory of your childhood. And we looked at people in Chicago, and we looked at 989 people from 45 states and 39 countries in terms of what odors made people nostalgic for their childhood. And we found that about 84% of people said that odors caused them to become nostalgic for their childhood. Is there any smell that makes you recall your childhood? Well, because your sense of smell has been down.
I have no recollection of ever being able to smell anything.
Yeah. So
I count on my memories to be my memories, unfortunately. So well, no, but I know my brothers will say, you know, if they smell bread baking, it does remind them of being at my grandma's when she would make bread. Or you know, in wintertime, people smell pine trees and they get all these emotions. I don't have time for emotions and nostalgia, doctor. I'm living in the now.
What I can tell you is that the number one odor that made people nostalgic for their childhood was baked goods.
Oh, okay.
It depended upon where they grew up and when they grew up. So if they grew up on the East Coast, the smell of flowers made people nostalgic for their childhood. In the South, it was the smell of fresh air. In the Midwest, it was the smell of farm animals.
Really?
In the West Coast, it was the smell of meat cooking or meat barbecuing. And it also depended upon it. From other countries, it was different. From Scandinavia, it was the smell of herring. And from some Africa countries, it was the smell of maize. And even from Canada, people described from Quebec the smell of tortillas. So we saw a great variety of different aromas that induced them to recall their childhood. But not only did it depend upon where they grew up, it depended upon when they grew up as well. So people, the older the person was, the more likely that natural smells would make them nostalgic for their childhood.
Okay.
Trees, hay, horses, pines, meadows, that sort of thing.
whereas the younger people were more likely to describe artificial smells that made them nostalgic for their childhood. Play-Doh, Pez, sweet tarts, vapor rub, even jet fuel. So we saw a gradual decrement of nostalgia for nature and a gradual increment of nostalgia for man-made chemicals. So the implication of this is maybe one of the reasons that people are so attached to the environmental movement is because it makes them recall their childhood, and if nature will now, in the future, may the environment not be as important to people because now instead of recalling nature, they're recalling artificial aromas.
Ooh, now that's very interesting. Did the responses matter if someone had a happy childhood or a sad childhood? Was there any discrepancies there, or was it kind of the same?
You're exactly right. We had anticipated, we found that 1 in 14 people had unhappy childhoods. And we had anticipated that if they had an unhappy childhood, that no odors would make them nostalgic for their childhood because they would have tried to repress those memories.
Sure.
What we found was that was wrong, that actually they did describe aromas that made them recall their childhood. But this instance, the aromas were unpleasant aromas, uriniferous smells or fecal smells or blood that made them recall their childhood. What that suggests us is that odors have such a strong way of impacting and inducing memory, it can even overcome any attempts at suppression of those memories. And so if you think about it for a second, odors have impact upon us all the time in all sorts of different ways. So let me give you another example of one of the things we've been looking at. We've been looking at the impact of malodors or bad odors. And, for instance, in the presence of a bad odor, when a colleague is told by turning a knob to the right, a colleague gets an electric shock, they turn the knob much further to the right. Or in days when there's bad smell and air pollution, there's an increased number of motor vehicle accidents, because drivers may be driving more aggressively.
So the smell of something bad is making people drive more aggressive, or there's more accidents, and the theory is that it's because people are more aggressive because there's a bad smell?
Exactly. And so we studied a mulching site south of Chicago, and on the days there was a bad smell wafting across the street to the school, there was an increase in behavioral problems in the school kids. So all of this suggests that bad odors tend to induce people to become more aggressive. Similarly, pleasant odors tend to reduce the degree of aggression. And so, the things that we do, our emotions are controlled so much based on smell, and we may go into a room and for whatever reason we feel angry or if we feel happier for no really good reason. Well, it may be that smell is working on us and impacting upon how we feel at that moment. And let me give you another example of how smells can impact upon mood and emotions. For instance, I guess one of the best studies we did was we looked at the effects of aromas on sleep. And we looked at sleep onset latency and REM latency. In the presence of lavender, for instance, there's an increase in alpha waves in the EEG in the back of the head, which makes people more relaxed and intends to induce them to fall asleep more. Okay. Whereas in the presence of jasmine, there's an increase in beta waves in the EEG in the front of the head, which makes people more awake and alert. So if you want to fall asleep sooner, you can use the smell of lavender there. And you can actually induce people to sleep quicker.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to get some lavender in the house. Not for me. I can't smell it.
That's right. It doesn't work in everybody. You have to have a normal sense of smell for it to work. You have to have a positive, and you have to like the smell. One of the other things we looked at was something called generalized anxiety disorder or anxiety. And when people are anxious, and you can actually take a normal person and make them anxious by putting them in a coffin-like tube. And what we did is we hooked up these brainwave electrodes and measured heart rate and EEG, and we put people in these coffin-like tubes, and we closed the lid on the coffin. It tended to induce people to become very anxious. And if you infuse the coffin with a green apple smell or a smell of cucumber, the degree of anxiety is less. Alternatively, if you infuse the smell of barbecue roasting meat, they become more anxious. So one of the ideas is that maybe the green apple smell is making people perceive the room as larger.
Huh.
And so, for instance, if you have a small room in your house or if you're very claustrophobic, you can put a green apple smell there and people will perceive it's larger. Alternatively, if you're agoraphobic and fearful of going out in the open, if you have a smell of barbecue roasting meat, you may feel more comfortable in doing so.
Before we get out of here, Doctor, let me ask you this. If somebody perceives a smell one way at a younger age, they like the smell of pick whatever, can those changes smell over time? As you get older, something that maybe you hated the smell of when you were young, now you like, and vice versa?
Absolutely. And in smell, we have miswanism, which is fear of the new and the unknown. And the more you're exposed to an aroma, the more you like it. And so one of the things is that, for instance, when couples initially meet, they introduced to all sorts of new foods, new odors, which they initially don't like. But over time, they begin to like each other's aromas or the foods and their different cultures. So we know that by repetitively being exposed to a smell, you tend to like it more than you would have otherwise. But even beyond that, there's a phenomenon that if you are exposed to an odor at the same time that you have a negative experience, you can immediately dislike that smell. And we see this in people who have what's called post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Mm-hmm. And, for instance, many people would describe when they were in the Vietnam War, they describe the smell of burning diesel fuel or a burning fish odor that reminds them of it, induces them to have a panic attack, and induces a flashback to the event. So we know that if there was a strong negative event associated with the smell, even if you liked the smell in the past, you now may dislike that aroma.
Huh. There's a couple people calling there with some questions. Can you stick around for a couple more minutes, Doctor?
Or
do you have somewhere to be? Because we can get you back in. All right, so we'll hang on. If you have a question for Dr. Hirsch regarding smell, taste, and what we've heard, because I wanted to get into also with you, we kind of broached on this, as I think it's important, though, to go back to people who were born in different decades, the smells that they perceive as favorable and things that make them long for or make them nostalgic, as opposed to, you know, as we get now into younger people, what they're doing. So we've got all that to get to on the other side of the news. Dr. Alan Hirsch is my guest. Smellandtaste.org is the website. Smellandtaste.org. Dr. Alan Hirsch from the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation. We'll talk more with the doctor on the other side. It is WGN. Brian Noonan on WGN. Karen Conte will be here after 8 o'clock. She'll be answering your legal questions. Right now, though, we are discussing smell, taste, their effect on your health, their effect on your well-being, everything related to those, with Dr. Alan Hirsch from the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation in Chicago. Doctor, thanks for sticking around. Good to have you. Let's get a question in real quick, and then we'll go back, because I this nostalgia study is fascinating to me, and as somebody who could not be affected by this, it's something that I know I hear people talk about all the time. But Jane has been hanging on. She wants to ask you a question. Jane, welcome.
Hi, Brian. I love listening to you.
Thank you.
Hi, doctor. As I'm listening to you describing the different things that happen to people over the years, many years back, a biochemist did research, Carl Pfeiffer, and we found that in our family, our biochemical imbalance is copper-zinc ratio. So if we can't metabolize copper, it shoots zinc out of the body, and zinc is meant for concentration, for healing, for good mood. So when our copper-zinc ratio is out of balance, we could be diagnosed with a mental illness. So I'm wondering if you've ever heard of the Carl Pfeiffer research done many years ago, because there is a biochemist nowadays, Bill Walsh, who does run a clinic. I think it's in Naperville at this point. He started in Wheaton and worked in conjunction with Carl Pfeiffer initially, and this has got to be 25, 30 years ago. So, you know, thinking about how people don't have a sense of smell, maybe they don't have enough zinc in the body, and maybe they're not metabolizing the copper that's coming into their body. But have you heard of anything like that, doctor?
Well, you know, you asked such a great question. No, I have heard of him, but you bring up a whole host of things, and that is, it has to do with zinc. And one of the things we know is that zinc is one of the metals that's used in the olfactory nerve to help allow odors to go up from the nose to the brain. And
right.
It's also used in taste. So we've, for many, many years, starting in the 1950s, people started using zinc to help people improve their sense of smell and taste. And when I was in medical school, they told us to try and use zinc. And there subsequently have been 3 double-blind studies showing that zinc was actually no more effective than placebo. But let me just tell you this, because one of the things that we we often find is after people have cardiac transplantation or kidney transplantation, their sense of smell goes down. And in those situations, there are many different drugs we like to use for smell and taste loss we can't use. And I said, well, you know what? There's an old treatment that we don't really believe works, and it's zinc, and we could try it because at least it's not harmful. Wouldn't you know, we used it, we found it helped these people. So all wow. I can say is that even though if you read literature that I've written, I say not to use it because it's not really effective, we now are still using it again.
Jane, well, thanks for the call. We appreciate that. With the doctor's answering the question about the zinc. So now you say it does kind of work, but only in certain people?
Only in certain people, but there's also something else, and as James sort of pointed out, that there's a balance between copper and zinc, and sometimes there's disorders of copper metabolism. One of them is something called Wilson's disease, where there's an abnormal accumulation of copper in the brain, and those individuals have impaired sense of smell, and what you can do is you can actually help reduce their copper level, and their sense of smell improves. So there's a balance there. One of the other things we found, and this was about a decade ago, there was a product out in the market called Zicam, and where people would infuse in their nose
right.
zinc, and to help try in theory to prevent them from getting a cold. But
yes.
What we found was that it actually caused them to lose their sense of smell. And so as a result, it's been modified to have less of an impact.
But that all came. Was that a temporary thing with that? When the sense of smell would go away if they stopped using the spray, would it come back?
No, it seemed like it was a permanent nature. As a matter of fact, the olden days, it was believed during the polio epidemic, it was thought it was being spread through the nose. So what they would do is they would infuse children with zinc in their nose to knock out the sense of smell to help prevent the polio transmission. Well, it didn't do anything for preventing polio transmission, but it did knock out the sense of smell. And we also know now that for an animal model for smell loss, we actually infuse zinc into the nostrils of the animals to knock out their sense of smell. So it was really not a really very smart thing to do to prevent colds with, especially
right.
because – but, you know, one of the challenges we have is so often nowadays different medications are put onto the market before we know if they impact upon one's sense of smell because it's never been considered to be very significant.
Yeah. Somebody texted in a question, and it's two-part I'll have to ask you to explain. Can you ask the doctor if GPCRs are inheritable and if they are the main receptor used in the study of smell memory? First of all, what are GPCRs, and then are they something that can be passed along?
I'm not sure what they mean by the GPCRs.
Oh, okay.
So I have to apologize for that. One of the things we know is that in the olfactory nerve, virtually every neurotransmitter known to man exists in the olfactory nerve and the olfactory glomerulus. So as a result, anywhere from nitrous oxide to carbon monoxide to norepinephrine and serotonin, virtually every single one that's ever been described exists there as well. And that may explain why so many medications we use can impact upon people's sense of smell.
Wow.
One of the other things we know is that there's a strong connection between smell and sexual arousal.
Uh-oh.
And we did a series of studies looking at odors and sexual arousal. The reason we did that is because we found that about a quarter of people after the loss of sense of smell from head trauma developed sexual dysfunction. And so it came up with this connection, and we weren't the first one to describe this. Freud, over 100 years ago, said that in order to remain a civilized society, we had to repress our olfactory instincts. Otherwise, we'd walk around sexually excited all the time. So what we did is we actually studied the effects of odors on sexual arousal. We took male medical students as volunteers, and we measured the effects of odors on penile blood flow. We looked at all sorts of different floral smells and perfumes. And as a
really?
Control, an odor we thought would have no effect at all, we threw in the smell of baked cinnamon buns. And lo and behold, the baked cinnamon buns had a greater effect than all the perfumes put together.
So that's cinnamon buns are more arousing when you can smell them than anything else when it comes to – men are so simple. We just want to eat,
Well, that's right. Well, you know, I have to tell you, though, this was in male medical students. You don't know that. I mean, they could always just be hungry all the time.
That's true. They're working a lot.
So then we studied males in the general population in Chicago, ages 18 to 65, and we studied all sorts of floral smells and perfumes and a whole bunch more food items. And what we found was the number one odor that enhanced penile blood flow was a combination of lavender and pumpkin pie. Number two was a combination of donuts and black licorice, and number three was a combination of pumpkin pie and donuts. However, there's an individual variation. So the older the man, the greater the engorgement with vanilla. Those who are most sexually satisfied had the greatest increase with strawberry, and those with the most frequent sexual intercourse had the greatest increase of lavender, oriental spice, and cola. And to give you an idea of what sort of changes those were, well, perfumes increased penile blood flow by a median of 3% compared to 5% for cheese pizza, 5% for buttered popcorn, and 40% for lavender and pumpkin pie.
Wow. So Thanksgiving is a time a lot of guys are going to want to get busy.
Well, that's
they smell
right.
Those pies cooking, and man, oh, man.
So after we did that study, the biggest question that we were asked was, you know, we don't really care what arouses men, what arouses women. So
yes.
We looked at vaginal blood flow, and we looked at all sorts of different floral smells and foods. And we basically had two different hypotheses, which is that since men are aroused by food, it made no evolutionary sense for man to be aroused if a woman isn't. Therefore,
sure. Food
odor should have to arouse women. And we had a counter-hypothesis, which is that since in our society, women are involved in preparation of food, which is not usually a very sexually exciting experience for them, food odors would act to inhibit sexual arousal. So we figured we had both bases covered.
Right.
Well, what we found was that the number one odor that enhanced female sexual arousal was a combination of Good and Plenty and cucumber, although Good and Plenty and banana nut bread also had very positive effects.
So licorice again, the black licorice comes in like it did in men at some point.
Exactly. And we did find some differences between men and women, though. In men, every single odor we tested enhanced penile blood flow. I guess it's traditionally men are just easy
shocking.
To arouse.
Yeah.
with women, that wasn't the case. Some odors actually inhibit sexual arousal. For instance, the smell of cherries, the smell of barbecued roasting meat, and the smell of men's cologne all acted to inhibit female sexual arousal.
Really?
So the bottom line of it, the aim is to induce female sexual arousal with a cologne. Men should get rid of their colognes and go get some Good and Plenty.
Yeah, and don't invite the ladies to a cookout. That's the other thing. Well, Doctor, it's always fascinating to talk to you. I appreciate all the information. We'll get you back in here soon because there's always a lot to talk about. Smellandtaste.org is the website. That's where you can find out all about the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation here in Chicago and Dr. Alan Hirsch. Doctor, again, thank you for taking the time this afternoon or this evening. I really appreciate it, and good to talk to you again.
Good to talk with you, and thank you so much.
You're very welcome. That's Dr. Alan Hirsch. Again, it's smellandtaste.org. See, now, my wife loves cherries, and she likes it when I grill. So I don't know. Maybe she's just doing it because she's hungry. She's not really attracted to me. She's just a little bit hungry. So I don't know. But very interesting stuff, and the whole nostalgia thing. I'll tell you, the different age, when you were born, the decades you were born, that's the smells that you really enjoyed. So like I was born in the 60s, and according to the study, the smells that would, if I could, bring back nostalgia, baby powder, mother's perfume, chlorine, window cleaner, dad's cologne, detergent, paste, Play-Doh, disinfectant, refineries and factories, motor oil, and exhaust. It doesn't sound like I'm missing much. We are back. Always fun. Brian Noonan on WGN. Karen Conti after 8 o'clock. Earlier, we made mention of how sometimes people are very rude and very disappointing. And here's a story that has a little bit of both, but it may or may not have a happy ending. It does have a happy ending. So a kid's working at a cookie store in a mall in Texas. He's at Great American Cookies at the Katy Mills Mall. I don't know if you've ever been to Katy, Texas, to go to the Katy Mills Mall. Sounds like a mall, they got cookie store. I'm always up for a good cookie. So a police officer comes to the counter to buy a cookie, and the kid working behind the counter decides, you know what, I'm going to pay for this police officer's cookie. Doesn't give him the cookie for free, pays for it out of his own pocket. That's a nice story right there. Speaks well of the youth of America, which I besmirch on a regular basis because, you know, most kids are punks. But this kid, a credit to children everywhere, teenagers or young people who are working at cookie
excellent
stores.
Gesture.
That's a very nice gesture. Appreciate law enforcement for the most part.
Yep.
All right, so the officer then thanks the employee and walks away. Well, wouldn't you know that the people behind the cop get all miffed
What?
Because the kid wouldn't pay for their cookies, too.
But so they like cops?
Well, yes, Roger, but see, now you're thinking logically.
Oh.
You can't think logically when it comes to the public,
yeah,
because the public is full of jerks. Like this family. I've done a lot of things. I pocketed some money that I found on the street, but I may be giving it back. But I would never assume that because somebody bought somebody else something, they should have to buy me something too.
Right.
It makes no sense. So these people behind him, behind the police officer, started a big commotion at the cookie store. There was all sorts of problems. Then the kid gets suspended.
What?
They tell him to come in and bring all his stuff to a meeting with the store's management. He was allegedly told that upper management wanted him fired. So, as is our time, his mom took to Facebook to spread this story. And after going on Facebook and writing that the manager of this cookie place. Now, upper management wanted him fired.
Mm-hmm.
The man up on the, you know, the guys who will get millions of dollars in bonuses when the Great American Cookie Company is sold to some other cookie company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Those guys.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
You know those guys. Read the papers. What's a newspaper? Yeah, read a blog. It doesn't matter. All right, anyway. Upper management wanted him fired. The store manager says, no, I'm not firing this kid because he's an excellent worker and he did nothing wrong. But the employee was then told that he had to be suspended for 1 week. Well, the mom gets on there. She's very upset. And she tells this story. Yeah. And, of course, then, as you can imagine, Great American Cookies at Katy Mills Mall is besieged with angry commentary.
Mm.
So they tell the Houston Chronicle, quote, on behalf of Great American Cookies, Katy Mills, we owe this employee an apology. Gee, you think? It was never an issue that he purchased a brownie for a police officer, but rather the events that unfolded with another customer in line at the time. Sure, the other customer who was an idiot and started screaming because the kid wouldn't buy their brownies.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Do something for the public. And then, you know, maybe somebody will buy you a brownie. Put your life on the line for somebody. Somebody will buy you a brownie.
There you go.
Hey, you do that. Bring me some proof that you've done anything, and maybe I'll buy you a brownie. However, after further review, we realized that the employee was, in fact, in the right, and we continue to reach out to him and his mom to issue an apology. The corrective action and suspension was reversed immediately, and we hope to connect with him today. Great American Cookies proudly supports law enforcement, because now they know the next time they push that alarm, nobody's coming.
Yep.
Nobody. They support law enforcement, first responders, and all who serve our country. That came from the executive vice president of Great American Cookies. He sent that to the Chronicle via email and then continued, though our stores are independently managed and operated, when the situation first arose, we reached out to the franchise to ensure that the situation was addressed and handled appropriately. So they didn't care about the facts. They just heard some customer complained, and so this kid's got to be gone. It doesn't speak well for career longevity.
No.
At Great American Cookies.
No.
If one complaint can get you fired.
Yeah.
If upper management wants you fired because some customer complained about you. One customer. And listen, if I own a business and one of my employees, you know, really goes berserk on somebody, yeah, my first response would probably be to, that person's not going to be dealing with the public in my business anymore. But you should get the facts, don't you think?
They should.
Well, sure they should. But now they've got to deal with this. If I'm this kid, I'm not going to go back. But
have they offered the job back or just an apology?
Well, we don't know that yet. Yeah. But the mother's Facebook post argued that the Great American Cookies, quote, failed on this one and said, thankfully, my son said he would do it all again in a heartbeat. So the kid would sell another cookie to or pay for another cookie for a police officer, which is fine. I don't know if he'll go back. You got to imagine they're going to offer him that job back. Now, his manager, his local boss, didn't want to fire him, but did suspend him. And that was probably to keep his job. But if they're all individually owned and operated, you know,
it's
his
a franchise.
So his boss actually bears the burden. His boss shouldn't have suspended him either. His boss should have said, listen, corporate policy states that you receive this complaint, I got to suspend you. But I realize that these people complained because they're jerks. And you had done something nice, and you're not expected to pay for everyone's brownies just because they happen to be in line. You know, right. Now I can see if you're a business owner and your employees are giving away your product, yes, that's a whole
it's
different
like stealing.
Story.
Yeah.
But again, let's not confuse things. He paid for this brownie.
Yeah.
Which was, what's a brownie at a Great American Cookie Place, a mall cookie stand?
Yeah, yeah,
$4
a buck and a quarter?
Maybe?
Oh, not even that.
A buck and a quarter for, where are you shopping for brownies? 1952?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
You know, no, I'm sure they're around $4. I haven't bought a brownie or a cookie at a mall. I haven't been in a mall in a long time. Who goes to the mall?
Not that many malls
anymore. A lot of people go to malls. I guess I'm not one of them. I used to go, when I was on the road, I went to the mall a lot because it was something you could do during the day for free. You could just wander around at a mall. I don't, now, what am I going to do at a mall? Hang out in the food court? Eat at Sbarro? Buy myself a Great American Cookie?
Oh,
that's not
go.
Happening.
Here's a menu.
For where?
What was
Great
it,
American
a brownie?
Cookie, a brownie.
A brownie. Gourmet, decadent brownies.
Yeah, what's a decadent brownie go for?
Well, now, which one did he get? Cheesecake brownie, red velvet, or a fudge brownie?
Give me a price. Give me a range of prices.
You know what?
They probably don't list the prices. Right, because they want you to come in. They sucker you in. Because once you got that taste for a brownie, you're going to pay.
Yeah.
It's like crack. You know, that's why they have little ones cut up on a tray. You take one little bite. Oh, man, I got to have more of this brownie. Now you're paying $7. It was $4, but now you're hooked. Now you got to have the brownie.
And then you're there every day, 10 times a day.
Sure. Then
you're fixed.
Then you're jonesing for the brownie. Yeah. Then you're like, well, I got to have coffee to wash down this brownie. Oh. Then you go down to the Starbucks or Great American Coffee or whoever's in the
They probably have their own coffee.
Bean and tea.
Yeah.
Maybe they have coffee at their own place. Great American Coffee with the Great American Cookie. Everything's
it's a great
American
place.
Oh, and it's all bigger in Texas. So you know that brownie is like dinner place.
Oh, my God. It's like a block long.
A lot of guys in belt buckles just leaning back in Wranglers drinking coffee.
Loosening up the buckle maybe a little bit.
Loading up their giant buckle. No, using the giant buckle as a plate for their big brownie. They're just leaning back. Like, oh, man. You got your cowboy pants on and you're just eating brownies. That's Texas, and just south of Texas, you know, is Mexico. You ever heard of it? Yeah, it's a beautiful country down there.
Yeah.
I hear they're building a wall.
They are?
Well.
Amazing.
A few people still believe that. I'm not one of them, but there's a few people who still hold on to that belief. But that's not why you called. You called for this story. A Mexican mayor has married a crocodile. Of course, that's why you called. You could have political debate anywhere. Rarely are you going to get international man marries crocodile stories. That's what this show is all about. So a Mexican mayor married a crocodile, and I like that they put in a bizarre ceremony. Really? That's not run-of-the-mill in many Mexican towns?
It happens every day, doesn't it?
I've been to Mexico. I've never seen anybody marry a crocodile.
Oh, well, maybe.
So maybe it is a bizarre ceremony.
Yeah.
It's part of an age-old tradition to, quote-unquote, bring luck to local fishermen.
What?
Well, let's hold on.
Well, if the crocodile's busy in the house cooking dinner, then fish can do...
I don't think crocodiles eat fish, Roger. I think they eat other animals. I don't think they eat fish. Well, we'll see. I'll give you some background. Don't worry about it.
All right.
The female crocodile, known as the princess, was baptized on Thursday, then subsequently dressed in a custom-made wedding dress and had her jaws clamped shut for the big day on Friday, which would explain a lot of marriages here. You know, the women went by a big dress. You know.
Sure.
She also wore a veil, and she was paraded through the streets accompanied by band music. It sounds lovely. I don't know where the bizarre part comes in.
Yeah, seems normal to me.
It seems 100% normal. After the procession, the reptile was married to the mayor. Oh, maybe this is where it
the
gets
mayor.
The show
oh,
the mayor. I said, I started.
Was a big deal.
I started with the sentence, a Mexican mayor married a crocodile. Did you forget that already?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm doing news up here at the same time.
Understand.
I'm confused.
Well, listen, this is a story you got to keep your facts
straight. I know.
So the reptile was married to the mayor of San Pedro,
Is there a picture?
It's a long, long name of
city?
This town.
Okay.
And I'm going to completely butcher it. But
Ciudad,
let's just say, no, it's
city.
Not Ciudad.
Okay.
It starts with San Pedro.
Then that's good enough.
Humalula Victor Aguilarand, I believe. But anyway, they got married in the town hall, which sounds nice. Probably had to pay for their own caterer, though, because I'm guessing the town hall doesn't have a kitchen.
Did you get a proper license?
The croc got hitched as part of a ritual in which has been practiced by the Chantal Indians since 1789. They believe the ceremony will bring good luck and prosperity to local fishermen along the Pacific coast of the Isthmus of two places in the Oaxaca State. According to custom, the crocodile is regarded as a princess and is believed she will bring peace and prosperity to their community. A wedding guest said afterwards, the dance they do is like an offer to God to thank for the land, the harvest, and the fish. You often, and this goes with any religion, okay. You often wonder how these ceremonies and rituals got started. Because right. At some point, somebody prior to 1789 said, you know what'll bring good luck? We got to marry a crocodile.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen.
Somebody started it.
Somebody did. It's Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, and yes, it's Sunday night after the 8 o'clock news, and that means Karen Conti is here to help you out and answer your legal questions. I'm sure over the holiday you got into a lot of legal trouble. 312-981-7200 is how you avail yourself of Karen's expertise and wisdom. Welcome back.
Good to see you.
You're back now, a short work week, but you are working even when you're out of town.
I'm always constantly working. That's the nature of life right now.
The law never sleeps, am I right?
You get an email, you got to return it, no matter where you are, what you're doing.
Would you ever consider taking a weekend and unplugging and going away and not having phone, email,
yeah,
anything? Would you really?
Absolutely. You know, I do that. I'd have to arrange for it ahead of time, you know?
So it'd be twice as much work to avoid it.
And then when I come back, I would expect to have a lot of things to do afterwards.
Right.
But no, I do that. And when you're out of town, certain places where you're in a time zone difference, right. you can't return calls. And if you do, you're not really in the world anyway. So
yeah. You're
really no good. And you know, I've got other associates who work for me, so, you know, they can have all my emails forwarded and help out clients if they need it.
Now, last week, we know you drove it back from Wisconsin just for your appearance here,
yes.
So you could help people out, which was lovely. Then you left town again. Did you have a nice 4th of July?
I did, and I just drove back today to be with you here tonight because I was at a wedding in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, really?
I was.
You couldn't wait to get out of Detroit, though.
I couldn't wait. You may have been
with people that you cared about, but you got to get out
of
Detroit.
I hate to badmouth a city, but let me just say, you know, we have problems here in Chicago. We have violence. We have race problems. We have financing problems. We've got mayor problems. We have all kinds of problems.
Well, maybe Detroit sounded better and better where you paint this picture.
But I have to say, this is a beautiful, vibrant city with a lot of opportunity and a lot of nice people and a lot of things going on that are very, very good. And things need to be fixed, that's for sure. But when you go to a town like Detroit, that's been a downtrodden city for a long period of time. There's some hope going on there, but
they're trying to rebuild some areas.
It's slow.
Yeah. And when they've let, you know, a lot of blocks just go back to seed, basically.
So
they
tore
down the buildings and just letting them grow and seeing what's happening. You can buy a couple blocks in Detroit. Start your own thing.
Build a big law compound.
Build a big, like, Detroit law castle. Like Mars Cheese Castle, but Karen's law castle.
People just drive in.
No?
No,
right.
I don't think so.
I'm always coming up trying to come up with ideas.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome. Well, we're glad you're here because based on the amount of calls already, people had some trouble since you were here last Sunday.
Okay, let's
so
get to it.
Let's do it. Let's take this one quick because this came in. I started the show at 6. I mentioned it about 6:08 that you were going to be here, and this text came in at 6:09. So this person really, really wants their question answered. Please ask Karen. I live in a condo. I have to take the stairwell with my dog. The door is sticking on our floor, and I was able to pull it open with a few tugs. One day, it wouldn't open. I pulled very hard several times and felt a pop in my shoulder and extreme pain. It didn't go away after 10 days, so I saw my doctor, and he sent me to an orthopedic doctor. Oh, now the screen over. There we go. Sent me to an orthopedic doctor, and I have two complete tears in my rotator cuff and need surgery.
Wow.
The management company said they knew about it for months and offered to get the door fixed, but the association said no, that they would fix it themselves. Do I have any case?
Yeah, you do. I would say that's premises liability, particularly because they knew about it. They had noticed that there was a problem. And is it reasonably foreseeable that a problem with the door could cause an injury to a resident? Maybe. Probably. It's, you know, be more clear if it were like a board on the stairs or something
right.
that someone fell through. But opening a door and tearing your, is that reasonably foreseeable that someone could do that? Maybe.
Well, you could also argue, couldn't you? Maybe you couldn't. That if a door doesn't open, that's fire risk. There's
right.
all sorts of things.
But you
that
can't
go
really sue for that unless you were hurt by that very
see.
Wrong.
Oh, okay.
So you'd have to draw that together. And then the other interesting thing is in the condo association is I believe the law still says that they have to have insurance. Okay. You know, the other part of this is, and I've seen people sue their own condo association, but then they raise sometimes the assessments
to pay for the
fact that you're basically paying to defend your own case. So I would say that what you'd want to do is to consult with a personal injury lawyer and someone maybe who knows a little bit about condo law, too, to make sure that the lawsuit is crafted in the best possible way, whether that's going to be against the condo association, the management company, or both of them. So if you would like to have the texter email me tell them, let me know who you are, and I will email you back somebody who I think might be good for your case.
And for other people, since we're talking about email, what's your email now so people can start planning that?
Sure. It's kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
All right. Here we go. Let's see. I'm not. Oh, it's Marcus. Let's start with Marcus. Hi, Marcus.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're well, thanks.
Thank you, Karen, for joining us tonight. You're like a lifesaver. I had 720 on, and the fact when they said that lawyer was going to be on, it just brightened up my day.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice. Who needs Brian, I guess, right?
Well, okay, listen,
never mind.
I'm not going to answer. I can't help him out. Go ahead, Marcus. What's your question?
Oh, sure thing. So I'm a small business owner, and last year I opened up my first shop, a restaurant, and we got merchant services and whatnot. We ended up changing merchant services about a couple months ago. So what ended up happening is I just got a call from a law firm saying that I owe $2,100 to my former merchant services company. And when we did all the switching over to the new system, we looked at it, and an email said that the contract was for 1 year, and they're saying that it's for 2 years. And the salesman said very clearly and plainly it was 1 year. We forwarded it back to the new merchant, to the old merchant services company. They're saying the term of service is set 2 years. I'm on the hook, and I'm just kind of wondering what exactly my kind of options are, available to me.
Yeah. So basically the contract, the written contract, is going to rule the oral representation, so that when you sign a contract, there's a rule that says that any prior comments or promises that were made to you are basically not valid.
Okay.
So they all get wrapped up. Always gets wrapped up in the terms, and that's almost always the case with some exceptions. So I'm not going to say that happens all the time, but in these kinds of cases, and I hear this all the time, where salesmen make all kinds of promises, and this you can always get out of it, and there's no fee, and it turns out they're wrong, and they're basically committing fraud. I think that maybe a strong letter to that salesperson and that salesperson's supervisor. I was told this was a case that was false, that was deceptive practices. I expect you're going to take care of this. I expect you're going to get this erased. And if not, you can threaten to do a number of things, to report them to the Better Business Bureau, to report them to their superiors, because I'm sure these companies don't want, you don't lie about a product to get somebody to buy it. I'm sure this guy made a big commission, on your merchant services account. But again, these things are very complicated, and I know that I use one in my business, and I switched myself, so I feel your pain, and they're very complicated. I mean, what they charge for each customer varies on what kind of account it is and how much it is, and it's hard to absorb it all, even if you're a lawyer or a sophisticated business person. So again, for everyone out there who is a small business, read it. You gotta read it, because your salesperson is probably, may not be telling you all.
Well, they're working in their own interest.
They're working in their own interest. So good luck, Marcus. I hope your restaurant takes off and is super successful.
I hope that helps, Marcus.
Thank you.
Don't fight the law. That's where you get a lawyer for. They fight the law. Karen Conti is here. 312-981-7200 is how you get in to have Karen answer your question. Let's get to Fred. He's been holding on. Hi, Fred.
Yes, I hope this isn't too silly, but the situation irked me. I was at a fundraiser for a charity, and they were having drawings. They had five cash prizes. It went from $2,500 down to $500. And they proposed to pull the $500 ticket first. And I went up and I said, that's not right. If you pull that $500 ticket, that person does not have a chance at the $2,500 prize. I said, you need to start at the top and pull the $2,500 first and work your way down. Now, it's a small thing. They kind of laughed at me, but I thought, am I right or am I just being goofy?
Oh, that's really...
You could be both, Fred. don't rule that out. You could be both. We'll find out.
The only thing I have to say is don't play the Illinois lottery. So,
But I can see what Fred is saying.
No,
right?
I never even thought about that. Because
either.
By taking that ticket first, you take them out of the running for the big prize.
Right.
So you know, everything comes down to the writing. You know, I mean, is this, Fred, was this something that had, like, writing on the back of the raffle tickets or rules and regulations somewhere, or was this kind of a loosey-goosey thing?
Kind of loosey-goosey, kind of. Although the ticket did say you can win $2,500.
Right.
And I'm thinking, wait a minute. If you pull my ticket, I jokingly said to the guy, I says, well, if I win the $500, I'm going to go into federal court and get an injunction against you guys.
Ooh, talking the law. Yeah, I like that. Look, you know, yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, in a very well-regulated, big raffle, you know, situation, they probably have it in small print that you basically give up your right to the one prize. If you win another prize, you can't win two prizes.
There was no small print on that one.
You know, that's really interesting. That, you know, I would say that maybe that's some sort of, you know, bait and switch, some sort of fraud, some sort of breach of contract, because they took away your chance by pulling that ticket.
So if I'm following your line of reasoning, if I'm someone who won the $500 and then I won the $1,500 or I won whatever leading up to the 25, the big prize, I've been conned by the raffle goers because I didn't have a chance to win the big money.
Right. So no one would think of this because I would think, oh, my gosh, I won $500. I never win anything.
Exactly. I would be so excited to
win. But, Fred, I mean, you're taking it to the next level. I think you have a valid point. I mean, is it worth bringing a lawsuit? Is it worth going to federal court? No. But it's a very interesting thing. But on the other hand, when you go to raffles, they don't draw the top one first.
I'm trying
don't
to...
they always go no, for
I
the...
Think, no, I think they do. And my solution to him was, I said, well, look, if you don't want to do it, because they're saying, well, I want to build up the suspense to the top.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. You write $2,500 on an envelope and you pull a ticket and you stick it in the envelope. Then you write $1,500 or $2,000 on a ticket and you pull a ticket. And then you pull the $500 and you announce it and you go up that way. That way, everyone has had a chance at the $2,500. But then their point was, well, Fred, that's going to look funny.
If
you pull out an envelope and here's the winning ticket.
Well,
I can see that.
The only thing I can say is I can't solve the problem of what happened to you, Fred, but for all of you out here who are holding church raffles.
Really? First of all, don't invite Fred.
I think Fred needs to be a legal consultant to your raffle because he thought of something I would never have thought of.
Because I'm with you, Karen. I would be so excited that I won $1,500. I'm going home a happy man. But not Fred. Fred, I like that you've been ruminating on this.
The other thing they said to me is, well, Fred, you got to buy more than one ticket. And I said, no. Why should I buy five tickets?
No, that doesn't solve the problem.
To support the charity, Fred. It's for the kids.
Well, these were $50 tickets. It wasn't a ticket.
All right, well,
you know what?
This is very interesting.
I think what I'm going to do, just for my own edification, I'm going to just go online and see if I can find a raffle somewhere where they have the small print. Because
I'm involved in a raffle. There's a drawing within an hour that I'm involved in a big raffle. I bought at the Irish American Heritage Center. They're giving away a trip to Ireland as the grand prize, and then there's like five sub prizes. I had never thought that if they do this, Fred, I have to leave. I have
to
get up.
Okay, can I be your advocate?
Please. Do you want to go instead?
I'd like to go to Ireland. That's where I'd like to go.
Me too. Fred.
Fred, thank you for your question. That's a great one.
You know, again, I'm not going to offer to sell you any sort of tickets in the future, Fred, but thank you.
I'm a soft touch.
See, you say that, and yet you're the guy standing up there arguing the legality of their drug. So I don't know.
Some people are more lawyers.
I didn't win any prizes, so it really was a moot point.
So it's sour grapes.
I say that's a moot point, then.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Fred. Thanks, Fred. Well,
he thinks more like a lawyer than I do.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have him on the show.
Listen, only if we're doing a whole hour of raffle questions.
Had you ever
would have thought. And I'm betting 99.9% of people would never think that, too. But now, I'm wondering up there, if the because it makes sense. I mean, what Fred said, as crazy as it is, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because I bought the ticket hoping to win the grand prize. Am I happy that I won another prize? Sure, of course.
But I never had a chance because you took me out of the running.
Right. So if, like, say they call me tomorrow, hey, Brian, good news. You won $500 in this raffle. That's terrific. But we pulled that first. Wow, but I really wanted to win the other prize.
Yeah.
It
just goes to show you that you need to think of all these contingencies. And I bet that if you go online, you're going to find some pre-written language that's solid and airtight that some lawyers have figured out.
The texters always come through. You have a choice to refuse that prize and put your ticket back in the drawing. So theoretically, I could say, you know what, put mine back. I don't want to win the 500. Put mine back in. I'm sticking for the...
I wonder if he had that option. I bet Fred didn't think he had that option.
Yeah, Fred didn't think of that one, did he, Fred?
No, but I think you probably...
I'm sure Fred did think of it. That's the...
Yeah.
That's the thing. Fred probably
And if he did, someone would call him ungrateful.
Huh. Oh, but somebody else said, isn't it gambling? So you always take a gamble right away.
But I think the point is he doesn't have a chance at the 25,000.
He was gambling on the big prize.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
And the others are supposed to be consolation prizes.
Right.
But I also see the building of suspense. This is all.
I see it both ways.
Look at that. Now we are in some sort of legal circle where you're chasing your tail. Because where is it right? Fred, look what you've done. You've derailed the entire thing. Let's go to the 630. My girlfriend was hit by and before I read this, I'm going to warn you, it's going to be very choppy. Because this texter used no punctuation, no capitalization. It's one long run-on.
You better take a big breath.
I've tried to read it. I tried to read it to you, and you know the trouble I had. My girlfriend was hit by another vehicle, and the insurance they have, I'm guessing, is bad. She has been waiting over a month to hear something about the claim and has a hard time getting through to the insurance company. Now they repeat that sentence. She's put a lot of money out of pocket for renting cars. Finally, she went to her insurance, and they said that their comprehensive that she has is going to take care of the whole thing. What options does she have, and what recourse does she have against the person who hit her and the other insurance company?
Okay, a couple of points. Some people have insurance that is called what we call substandard, and they're just crummy insurance companies that don't get back to you and don't get back to you. And you might have to hire a lawyer if you want to recoup what you need to recoup.
Okay.
Interestingly, her own insurance covered it. So in that case, I'm not sure why her insurance company covered all of it. And maybe there's a reason that I'm not aware of. But at that point, we have an issue called subrogation, which means when you sign your insurance policy or when you pay your premium, you agree that if the insurance company pays you for something,
right,
reimburses you for some loss, that they step into your shoes, that insurance company, and they can go after the wrongdoer themselves to recoup what they paid to you.
Got it.
So because our texter was fully compensated, according to the text that I'm hearing, you wouldn't have a right to go after your money again from another insurance carrier.
Right.
That insurance carrier, your own insurance carrier, would have that right to subrogate and go after that wrongdoer.
Okay, so then the answer, long and short, nothing.
You have nothing
to do. Once you've been paid by your insurance company, you're pretty much done.
I mean, let's just say that she's got personal injuries
and
that were not compensated by her own carrier because her own carrier was car insurance and it didn't pay her medical. For some reason, I don't know. Then she should hire a lawyer, and I think sometimes you just have to sue these people because the substandard insurance carriers, they wait, and they know it's a 2-year statute of limitations, and they'll wait, and they'll wait. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they shine you on so that you don't, you think they're going to settle, and then they don't, and 2 years goes by, and you've lost your right to sue. If it's enough money to hire a lawyer, you should get a personal injury lawyer and go after what you're entitled to.
Right. We got a text from the person with the door saying they will definitely be emailing you, and thanks for reading the text and all that. So they're very excited about that. Let's real quick, because we only have a couple minutes, and I think we've got some calls waiting, but they look like they might take a few more minutes to answer. 312-981-7200 is the number. That's how you get a hold of Karen Conti. Real quick, we talked about Venus Williams last week, and that the police at that point had said she was at fault for this accident where a man died. Now they've looked at some other footage that they found, and they're saying we don't think she's really at fault.
Yeah, interesting. Because it looks like she avoided an accident.
Yes.
And as a result, someone, however that happened, I can't picture it really from the text.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
But what's interesting about this is a lot of people say, well, she's got insurance for this. The problem is that when you have a death, and let's just say that she were at fault,
right.
And her insurance is $1 million, which is, you know, a good
pretty
amount
good,
of insurance.
Sure.
That's, you know, that's a lot. What we have is, you know, people who walk amongst us,
right,
have umbrella policies.
Regular people.
But the only reason that you feel protected at $1 million is because personal injury lawyers don't want to go after your personal assets.
Right.
They'll accept that $1 million and say, that's all I'm going after. I'm not going to go after your car and your home and all that stuff because it's just too hard to get to.
And they got their money.
With someone like Venus, who's worth, I don't know, let's just say she's worth $30 million.
Million.
Okay, let's say she's
$30 million.
They're not going to stop at her insurance.
Right.
They're going to go after her personal assets because she's a deep pocket. So, interestingly, I would love to know if this comes down the line, if she gets sued, how much insurance did she have? Do people who are rich have more insurance they really should to protect their personal assets?
And if you're deemed not responsible for the accident, can you still, I mean, people can still sue you for whatever,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just because the accident reconstruction people say, no, she wasn't at fault, that doesn't mean that they're not going to sue her. I would be shocked if they didn't sue her.
Brian Noonan, Karen Conti, 720 WGN. Karen is here every Sunday night answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. Do you have a legal question? You should get it in quickly because time always runs out. But Kathy was smart. She got in early, and she's been hanging on. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, both of you. It's such a pleasure to listen to both of you. I just have a question about a condo-related issue. It's actually kind of silly, I think, because it's sort of a no-brainer, but I've been getting several different answers. I live in a first-floor condo, and the second-floor unit toilet is leaking and has caused ceiling damage. And I just wanted to know who would be responsible, the condo association or the person individually?
The person individually, you know, that's his deal. And does he have insurance for this?
Yes.
Okay. And have you discussed this with him? Has he submitted this to his carrier?
No, he said it was my problem. And I thought...
How could it be your problem if your ceiling is leaking from his...
He's the one who caused... Well, I mean, not purposely, but his toilet caused the problem. And I'm thinking... Well, no, it's that's why I'm thinking this is a no-brainer. It's not my problem.
You know, this is the hard part because when he doesn't submit it to his carrier, it's not like you have a direct right to go after his carrier, because that's what you'd like to do is just to say, hey, State Farm, you know, here's my claim. Will you pay it?
Yeah.
How much is at stake, Kathy?
Like,
how much does it cost to fix it?
Honestly, I don't know. I didn't get an estimate.
Okay.
I'm sorry, he's just telling me that, he said he talked to his insurance company and they said I was responsible.
Okay.
There's
a couple things you could do. You could submit it to your own carrier and see what they'll do, okay? Maybe they'll fix it and then go after him. Or if it's worth enough, you can get a lawyer to sue, or you can sue yourself. I mean, if you, I don't know how much it is, you can go into small claims court and bring the suit yourself. You can basically say, you know, it's negligence, what he did, he caused this damage. It's pretty clear liability.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he probably will tender it to his insurance carrier. If he doesn't, he's really, you know, not very bright, because that's what your insurance is for. I'm sure he's not giving it to his carrier because he doesn't want his premiums to
sure.
To increase, which they will. So I think those are your two options.
But really, he is supposed to be responsible.
Yeah, unless I'm missing something from what you're telling me. I mean, even if he had no control over his toilet, he's responsible for his domain. And if his, go ahead.
My only question is, because this happened with a friend of mine who lives in a high-rise condo here. It was a pipe that was in the... It wasn't in the U. Well, it wasn't like my toilet blew the gasket.
It was in the common area.
It was the pipe that went up through the walls.
This is a gasket. This is a gasket in the toilet.
Okay, then that's... That's different.
Because that would be more complicated, where you might have the association responsible because it's from a common area, common. I just think, you know, I think you need to go and get an estimate as to what would repair this. I don't know if, I mean, did he repair his floor? I mean, he must have had damage up there, right?
He repaired, right, it's a gasket, so he said he repaired it, and then right after he repaired it, he did say, oh, I'll come and repair your ceiling. Okay, well, months later, then all of a sudden, he's not going to.
And the other thing you could do just before you bring a lawsuit or jump to that that solution, you know, you might have a lawyer write a letter to say, you know, this is your fault, this is negligence, please submit it to your carrier. If we don't, we're going to sue you and, you know, whatever, and see if he'll do that, because the guy doesn't want a lawsuit against him. No. You know, once that starts, that's a problem. Maybe you take that step first, because it's expensive to, and it's time consuming to bring your own lawsuit. It's not an easy thing to do.
I wouldn't want to go that far. I just wanted to make sure that he would be the one to be responsible for his own unit.
Oh, certainly he would. I don't know how your association deals with this, but you might want to mention it to them, and you know, and maybe they'll put some pressure on him, because that's not fair to you. So that's just a thought.
Good luck, Kathy.
Yeah, good luck.
I hope it works out. Well, we, you know, as often happens, we get one call and that leads to other calls on the same topic.
Okay.
Henderson has some water damage too. Hi, Henderson.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. I didn't want to make waves at first, but I sent an email about this water damage in my bedroom over the window, and I think it's the lady's air conditioning that's causing it. Well, they told me to wait and see if maybe it's some weather outside, you know, water seeping in or something, and to just run my hand over the wall from time to time every time we have water. Okay, you know, a year has passed, and they're either they keep forgetting about me, or maybe I don't know if I waited too long. What do I do, talk to my insurance or...
Well, I think you have to determine what the problem is, because is this something, again, the same issue? Is it something from a common area? Is it a problem with your own window that needs to be repaired and cause the damage? Is it somebody else's air conditioning?
No, it's above my window.
Okay.
And it's plaster, and it's starting to buckle, and the paint has peeled.
Okay.
And I've only lived here for about 2 years, and when I came in, everything was pretty. It was newly done. But there's
this
water damage.
So I guess I'm going to give you I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I know we're kind of tight on time. You have to figure out who caused it, what the problem is. So I would get maybe somebody in who can look at it and say, oh, this is because of something you did. This is something because the air conditioner. It's because of, you know, you need to figure that out, because you can't blame somebody unless you have something in writing that says this is what it's going to cost to repair, and this is what the problem is, and this is what caused it. And generally these kind of people, these handy people who go in there, they know. Yeah. They can figure it out. They can see where it's coming from. They might have to...
What kind of people you mean, like an outside person? Come in.
Yeah, like a handyman, somebody who repairs plaster or repairs windows. I'm really not an expert at that, but you'll find somebody who knows what to do and where it came from. And then you can start with that, and then you can make a claim against whoever. You can certainly call your own insurance company and have them come in there. And again, they might repair it and then go after the person who did it.
Your homeowners
or
whatever.
Those are two options for you, Henderson.
Well, good luck, Henderson. Good luck. I hope you find out where that water's coming. Water is just... It always it's going to find
everything.
Its own path, they say.
That's right.
A texter from the 312. Can a physician be legally liable for over-prescribing opioids, which in turn caused the death of a family member due to an overdose?
Ooh. I have to know a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay. So... You know, did the person take it as prescribed? Did the person take too many because she was addicted? How long was she addicted? Did the doctor know she was addicted and continue to prescribe? I mean, these are all big questions.
Okay.
What I would do is send me a text or an email, rather. That's the best way to get a hold of me. And give me your information, and I'll probably call you back and maybe give you a referral to someone who does malpractice. Certainly, prescribing things there's a cause of action for that, and there is a cause of action for people who overdose because the doctor didn't recognize or wasn't taking care of the fact that this was an addiction issue. This is a very common problem we have now. Very, very common. And again, doctors have to be very careful in what they do and make sure they're not taking too much of their medicine. But if it was one time where she took three pills instead of one and then overdosed, the doctor may not have been responsible. Right. I think we have a lot of facts here that we need to flesh out, and then I can give you some advice one way or the other.
Because that makes sense, because as you said, too many levels.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you could have, doctor may have prescribed something, somebody gets addicted, but they don't go back to the doctor then isn't giving them more. They could be getting it. So yeah, there's
a lot of facts we need to know.
So yeah, give that email again.
Sure. It's K Conti, K C O N T I, at kcontilaw.com.
All right. That's Karen's email. So again, always when you email Karen, give her all the details. That way your time is not wasted. Karen's time is not wasted, and she has all the information she needs.
The couple things that are important are the date that happened, so I can know if there's a statute of limitations, and what county it happened, where the doctor was, where the accident was, where everyone lives, so I can tell you what county it's going to be in, and maybe then when I give you a referral, I'll find you someone from that county.
Very good. Okay, so email there. Let's real quick, maybe not real quick, the mayor of Chicago, since we were talking about all the wonderful problems that Chicago has, we always do, we all live here, and the mayor has now decided that for someone to get their high school diploma, they're going to have to show an acceptance letter to a college, or a letter from a job, or a letter from the military branch that they've decided to join in order to get their diploma, even if they've completed all of their scholastic requirements and the public service requirements. They're ready to graduate, but he wants them to have a plan. Can they do that? Is that legal? And isn't there an intrinsic, because anytime you graduate from a public high school, you are immediately eligible to go to
a community
right. college in the Chicago
they have
college
to accept
system.
You.
Right. So, theoretically, they're already into a college, a community college. What's the deal here?
You know what? I don't know the answer to that, Brian, okay. But I was thinking about it, and I think that, you know, certainly you can put qualifications to graduate,
okay?
And you can not graduate people if they don't meet those requirements, but I think that there's, you know, the statutes that set forth what those standards are, and can Rahm Emanuel come in and just lay another one down on the people of the city of Chicago? Right. I don't know the answer to that. That doesn't seem fair, but I'd have to look into it more carefully. The other question I have is due process. You know, if you are enrolled in school now, and let's just say, you know, in order not to get a diploma, don't you get some process? Do you have to go through a hearing? Why didn't you find a college to go to? Why didn't you find a job? Are your parents sick and you need to stay home and take care of them? Is that your plan?
Right.
You know, there's got to be a procedure that takes away your right to that diploma because it's government action and due process kicks in.
And some people take a year off.
And some people take a year off, but that, I guess, if you had a job, that would fulfill the requirement. And the final thing is, I know that it's going to come up. People, kids in the disadvantaged areas are going to say, we're affected more because we can't get jobs, because maybe, you know, we can't afford to go to college right now, and your point is well taken that they're all able to be accepted, but I've got to stay home and take care of my little sister or whatever the question. Some kids in high school have kids already.
Yeah.
So we have all these different things, and you could say that is a violation of equal protection, meaning people are being discriminated against, or it's affecting certain communities more harshly than other communities.
Huh.
So all of those things will definitely be litigated if this goes into play.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, because a lot of, you know, the mayor.
It sounds like a good idea, but I don't know if it makes sense.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it's like, yes, we want to make sure
we want you to have a plan
and are ready for an economy that is going to require all of these things. And okay, I get it, but at some point, you're also legally an adult, most graduate, 18, 17. But is it the city's job to be the parent and say, well, what are you doing? Because that's usually the parent will say, what's your plan?
What if you don't execute on your plan?
Right.
Can they take away your diploma?
Yeah, can you?
I mean, there's so many things.
Not to go to college.
What if you say I'm going to Hollywood to be an actor? I mean, you know what?
Sure. You know, it could be anything. You know, I'm taking a year and I'm going to travel, or I don't know what I'm going to do because I'm 17 and I'm you know barely going through puberty. I don't know what I don't know what's happening to me. So yeah, we'll see. All right, a few more minutes with Karen Conti, 312-981-7200. If you have a legal question, get it in now so you do not miss out. Let's talk about this case in Baton Rouge. There were some shootings, and a police officer was killed. So there was lawyers for one of the wounded law enforcement officers have filed a complaint in U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Louisiana against various arms of Black Lives Matter, including their leader, DeRay Mickison and Janetta Elise, or LZ rather. The complaint alleges that Black Lives Matter and its leaders are responsible for the shooting because they, quote, incited the violence against police in retaliation for the death of black men shot by police and did nothing to dissuade the ongoing violence and injury to people. In fact, they justified the violence as necessary to the movement and war, end quote. How responsible then is an organization if people who follow it, even from a distance, take matters into their own hands? Is there deniability from the organization, or are they ultimately responsible because they planted the message and sent people on their way? Oh, sorry.
It's a very interesting issue. And just by way of analogy, the prosecutors of cities, in fact, in Elgin, they brought a civil lawsuit against, I think it was like the Spanish vice lords or something like that, saying, you know, we're going to enjoin you because we can't tell you can't stand on the corner because we can't roust you without a reason. But because you're gang members, we're going to bring a civil suit saying you're a nuisance. We're going to say you can't do graffiti. We're going to enjoin you from doing things. And when you don't do those things, we're going to take assets away from you to the extent we can prove you have assets. So it's a tool to get what you want. This is very interesting because is Black Lives Matter an organization worthy of being a defendant? And I think there's some good evidence that it is because it is an organization. They raise money. Okay. They have stated purposes. It's not a real cohesive, you know, it's not like the ACLU where it has a structure and a corporate board and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But certainly, then the next question is, did Black Lives Matter cause the death of this police officer? Did they have a stated policy that they incited to a point where their organization was the proximate cause of one of their members going out and killing this police officer? I think that's attenuated. I don't know that that's really going to be easy to prove, but it's an interesting lawsuit because what they're doing is they're trying to, I think, get Black Lives Matters to cough up money to defend this lawsuit, which in federal court costs you $100,000 before you even walk in the case. I mean, that's how expensive it is to defend a case, even in Louisiana. Federal court. So what they're probably trying to do is disband Black Lives Matter or take away their funding by virtue of bringing this lawsuit.
Wouldn't you have to prove that the gunman was in fact a member of Black Lives Matter? Because, I would imagine that could be argued that it's just some lunatic.
Assuming that they can prove that. I guess I was just assuming that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, if that's not the fact, clearly there wouldn't be any. I mean, you can't just say just an organization by virtue of it being present makes people do things. That would be like saying, you know, the Christian, you know, crazies are making people kill abortion clinic doctors. That's just not the case.
But it didn't happen because it didn't happen at a rally. You know, it happened. It was an ambush by itself. So it wasn't like there was a march like we had here in Chicago and they've had all over the country for all kinds of groups. It wasn't. The violence didn't come from that activity.
Right.
So.
Well, and I think they're going to have to prove, if I had the gavel, unless I heard the testimony that Black Lives Matter letters got together and they said, here's what we need to do. We need to go out and ambush. I'm quite sure that didn't happen. But if that happened and someone went out and did that, might there be a responsibility? Yes. But other than something very concrete like that, I don't think there's going to be liability.
But if you take this lawsuit to another example, let's say I'm the family of an abortion doctor and somebody, a strong Catholic who believes that abortion is wrong, blows up the abortion clinic,
right.
kills my whole family. Could that family then sue the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church has been preaching, you know, this is wrong and this person is a follower of that religion? I mean,
no, because the Catholic Church, I know, doesn't say go out
well,
and kill
people.
Well,
they don't say, but they say defend
life. You know, this comes into play quite a bit. I mean, even just talk, social talk, you know, when this the shootings happened in Washington or mm-hmm. Virginia, where the crazy guy from Illinois came out and shot the Republicans because he doesn't like Republicans. He's a Bernie Sanders follower. I saw so many irresponsible journalists say, see, look at, you know, it's the liberals who are...
Violent liberals, yes.
It has nothing to do with that. You know, it's like saying, you know, if the Republicans were nicer, they wouldn't have got shot. That's a terrible thought. This guy was crazy. Crazy people hold all kinds of opinions about things. And political parties don't make crazy people shoot people. They just don't. As opinionated as you might be, I wouldn't go out and shoot someone. That you're crazy. When I say crazy, you're mentally ill.
And because I know we'll get this, and it goes to what you were saying. There was a lot of talk during the presidential campaign that Donald Trump's speech at a lot of his rallies was inciting violence because people were, you know, they were fighting in the rally, they're doing all this. It's kind of the same thing you're talking about. So we couldn't, where is the line where somebody is responsible? Because now Bernie Sanders never talked about, you know, violence or revolution or anything like that. So it's easy to make the jump and say, well, he's not, this shooter is not connected to that.
Right.
Whereas some could argue that the president, in some of his speeches, was inciting violence.
I still think there has to be, you need to go do this. You're a member of my organization.
Yes.
A direct, it's like,
which
like
the president,
for instance,
never did, just
if,
did.
If Black Lives Matter says, we're going to organize, and we're going to stand on this highway, and we're going to use axes to go after cars.
Okay.
And everyone did that, and injured people. I see that could be a lawsuit directly against Black Lives Matter because they organized, they had a plan, they incited the violence, they told people to use the violence,
right.
And I see a real direct result there, which is damage. But just talk, I don't think, unless you're really telling someone to do something, they're part of the organization, it's part of a plan, I just don't see there to be civil liability.
Well, this should be interesting to watch.
And yeah, it should be.
Like you said, if it's a plot by the prosecutors to try, or the lawyers, to try to break the organization financially, that will probably come out as well.
Yeah, and they're going to have to defend it unless they're going to get a judgment against them, and then all their money they raise is going to go to pay off a judgment.
All right, we've got only about a minute,
sure.
So this is real quick.
Okay.
Wisconsin has Summerfest. It's ending tonight. They have now sued Red Lobster because Red Lobster last year started doing a promotion that they called the Red Lobster Summerfest. Now the Wisconsin Music Festival... Milwaukee World Festival, Inc. is suing Red Lobster. They filed in federal district court saying that they are using their trademark name, and they're trying to get Red Lobster to stop using Summerfest and destroy all products associated with their name because they registered that trademark, Summerfest did, in 1972. Now, last year, they filed the same suit that Red Lobster was infringing on their trademark, and Red Lobster stopped and changed the name to Crabfest, but now Red Lobster is at it again. Trademark infringement has got to be very difficult when it's something like Blank Fest, where Summerfest seems like kind of a...
Well, and just because they have a trademark doesn't mean that they're going to win this necessarily, because Summerfest is used all over the place. I mean, I've seen those words in different states and different places. The question is probably going to come down to whether there's actual confusion. You know, do people go into Red Lobster thinking, hey, this is like the Milwaukee Summerfest.
Right. This is where I'm going to see Tom Petty.
Yeah, or something like that. And I just don't see that there's actual confusion because the products are completely separate.
Right.
I understand why they're doing it. They want to protect their name. They get it. They spend a lot of money and time promoting, but you would think that it might be helpful to them to have, you know, Red Lobster say the name Summerfest, because that means people might say, hey, why don't we go to Summerfest?
But if people don't like Red Lobster, then you've tainted Summerfest. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. You'll be back next week?
I will.
Fantastic. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
312-332-7800 or kconti at kcontilaw.com.
And people will hear you Wednesday morning at 6:40 with Steve Cochran.
That's right.
All right. Very good. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
You too. Now back to work. All right. Let's do this. Then we'll say goodnight. It's WGN.
All of us are online. On demand. WGNradio.com. On demand.
Thanks for listening and being part of the program. Thank you, Cassara, for sitting in with us tonight. We're glad to have you. Welcome. We'll hope to see you again sometime. Thank you, Roger, as always, and mostly thank you for dressing as a normal human being tonight. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.